Peter to interview Osama bin Laden back in 1997. Peter Arnett has some interesting thoughts about our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he'll share them with you on The Wake Up Call, Wednesday morning at 9. Time now for another edition of The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown. Views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of WGNU Radio. This broadcast is a production of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio, and is intended solely for the information and entertainment of our listening audience. Any rebroadcast, transcribing, recording, or other use of this material without the expressed written consent of Norman Broadcasting Company, Incorporated, and WGNU Radio is strictly prohibited. We ask that you govern your calls within the bounds of brevity and good taste. And now, The Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I listen? I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, how can I listen?
It is time for us to use our power. Please do not beg for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you. The people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. I will never say that progress has been made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. If you pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below that the low knee.
But the hard truth is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. They struggle against the common enemies of man: tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
treatment. So we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the morning wake-up call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And my toll-free long distance is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. We have much, much, much to talk about. 454-0400 is my phone number. Well, I've been thinking. I'm pretty excited about having a Pulitzer Prize winner on the show this morning. Peter Arnett is going to be on the show at the 9 o'clock hour. I'm very excited about that. I got some questions to ask him about the media and the media coverage and what he has seen and what he knows. And I think that it's made even more significant when we look at the role that the media used to play. And I think that we all, not that we all, but many of us, those of us who can see, understand that the media played a whole different role back in the Vietnam War, even in World War II, than what it plays today. And I'm telling you, folks need to get up off of this sports mentality towards politics. My team, I'm with the Reds. I bleed blue, whatever the heck that means. But in the big picture of things, in the medium picture of things, in the small picture of things, it doesn't matter whether the Blues win a game or not. It doesn't. Your life will continue to go on. All it may mean is that you don't have the opportunity to take your hard-earned money and give it to somebody else so that you can wear their logo on you. That's really what it means. And those deathbed, those seven-year-old tow-headed boy deathbed scenes of hit one out of the park, babe, those don't happen that often. But it does matter which team is in power. That will have that will determine whether or not you can afford that Blues, that $75, $115 Blues jersey. That or buying your mama her monthly medication. Because this prescription drug benefit from Medicare has turned out to be a huge farce. So it doesn't matter. The only thing that does matter is the team that is in office. We now have a report that has come out of a story that's come out of the LA Times. The annual meeting of the American Economic Association. Y'all know anything about that team? What its stats are? All you sports fans out there, you know what the stats are for that? You know who plays on that team? You know what their colors are? You know who their coach is? Well, the American Economic Association received a new estimate, for the likely cost of the war in Iraq. The final bill, and this should come as no surprise to anybody that has their eyes wide open, the final bill would be much higher than previously reported. They're liars. Of course they lied about the cost of the war. They lied about why we went into it. Lying comes easy. They're saying now that the war will cost between $1 trillion and $2 trillion, depending upon primarily on how much longer our troops stay. Putting that in perspective, the highest grossing movie of all time, The Titanic, earned $1.8 billion worldwide. And let me put that in perspective. Titanic earned $1.8 billion worldwide total. That is half the cost that the U.S. incurs in Iraq every week. Are you feeling me? Are you feeling me? And kind of like the iceberg, you know, the iceberg only shows 10% of what its size is above the surface. Most of what is that, what consists, what an iceberg consists of is below the surface. That's kind of like the war in Iraq. We only see the tip of the iceberg. And the calculations are just not just money for combat operations, but also the cost of the government that the government will have to pay for years to come. That's the lifetime health care, the lifetime disability benefits for returning veterans, the special round-the-clock medical attention needed for many of the 16,000 Americans already seriously wounded, the increased cost of replacing military hardware because the war is using up equipment at three times the peacetime rate. The military must pay a large re-enlistment bonuses and other higher benefits to re-enlist reluctant soldiers. And on top of that, because we finance the war by borrowing more money from abroad, there is a rising interest cost on the extra debt, $1 trillion and $2 trillion is what this war has cost. So far. Are you feeling me? Are you feeling me? And I guess I am struck by the it's just amazing. That this on this little teeny tiny plot of land in a faraway country that most people had not ever heard of prior to this war, for real, most people would say Iran when they meant Iraq. So you didn't know the difference between Iran and Iraq. And Saddam Hussein is not turned into the Hitler that George Bush wanted him to be. He really looks like a pathetic old man. I mean, that's kind of like saying you could be Hitler without Auschwitz. You know, you could be Hitler without the murder of all the Jews. Saddam Hussein didn't have weapons of mass destruction. What does that make him? It makes him, you know, I mean, he ain't no Hitler. He ain't no Hitler. So what did we get for our money? What did we get for the price of our ticket, sports fans? What did we get for the price of our ticket? You get the happy high that you have when you come back and we won. No, we didn't win. The team won. You get that happy high. You get that let's burn the city down excitement that you get when your Super Bowl team shoots and scores. That's the wrong analogy, I know. But you feel me on this? You feel me on this? What did we get for our price, the price of our ticket in Iraq? They have a democracy. You go there and live. Under their democracy. All you folks that want to tell other folks, it's the best democracy in the world that we have here. Well, we spent over $1 trillion. And if we're going to assess the strength of their democracy now that the elections have been had, I guess we can ask the reporter who remains unnamed pretty much. How's that democracy thing working out there in Iraq? Can you call your mama when you want to? Can you call your daddy when you want to? Or maybe democracy it occurs every time you get your picture on Al Jazeera as another kidnapped hostage. Maybe that's how democracy rolls. What did we get for the price of our ticket? Did our team win? Was it a draw? Or has our team been obliterated off the map? It's like you have the best team in the world. It has the best outfits. No, I guess it's more like you have the highest paid management in the history of sports. A team with no equipment, awful uniforms, who don't want to play, put on the field. It's awful. This war has cost $2 trillion. $1 billion is how much we spend in Iraq every week. Ask yourself, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, what could this country do with an extra $1 billion a week? How many weeks are there? How many days are there? No, there are 52 weeks in a year, right? Suppose we gave $1 billion to every state. We gave $1 billion. We had over $1 billion to give to every state in the union. We can throw in Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. and be done with it. That's how much money we've spent so far on Iraq. We had $1 billion to give every state in the union. What do you think? Well, what would Matt Blunt do with it? There would be a whole lot of high-paid consultants out there. But you get my point. You get my point. And we should ask the question, if the war costs $2 trillion, why did you lie about it? Lawrence Lindsay, the White House, and this is a joke, economic advisor, don't let him do your taxes. He was suggesting that the war would cost up to $200 billion. The administration said, the president's budget office said it's only going to cost $60 billion. George Bush said this war was going to cost $60 billion. It's cost $2 trillion. Imagine if we had just taken $1 billion and we put it into Social Security. Think of all the people with disability we would be able to take care of. Think of all the children who would be able to go to college if it was fully funded. Think of all of this mental security that our seniors would have. I mean, if we had taken $1 trillion and put it into Social Security, that would fix Social Security for the next 75 years plus 75 years. And isn't it nice to have a bill paid off? You know, that you don't have to worry about that. And particularly, you don't have to have politicians. Fussing, BSing about the problems of Social Security. Fix it, walk away from it, and we're done with it. Oh, Jesus. These are troubling times. And we have these clowns up in Washington, D.C., in the light of Jack Abramoff, the mother of all graft. We have them saying, okay, we want to pass legislation to say that you can't take gifts from lobbyists. Huh? How about a piece of legislation that says that you can't take a political contribution from a lobbyist? How about that? How about that? You know what? Four five four oh 400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Peter Arnett is going to be Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. Is going to be in our show, on my show at the 9 o'clock hour. You don't want to miss that. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. You need to get to me. We're taking a break, but that's all right. I'll be back.
St. Louis, 30 minutes after the hour of 6 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Northbound 55 between Herculaneum and McNutt all the way to 270 looks good. Eastbound 44 from 109 to the Merrimack River Bridge, nothing to report. Eastbound 40 from Mason all the way to Hanley looks good. Eastbound 70 from Cave Springs to 270, no problems there. Northbound 270 at 44 in Marshall, look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes all the way to 79, look for slow traffic there. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge, you've got slow traffic. Westbound 64 before the 5570 split, look for normal traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic is slow or is working fine at Laclede's Landing. And northbound Route 3 at the Poplar Street Bridge, look for no problems to report. 14th and Shodo, those traffic lights are not working. They have stop signs up at this hour. And 10th and Clark, there's an injury accident. The traffic is light in that area, so there shouldn't be too many delays. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by McDonald's Restaurants. Enjoy a little daylight savings time at McDonald's. Stop in for one of three delicious breakfast extra value meals like the Egg McMuffin, hash browns, and a small coffee, all for under $3. McDonald's, I'm loving it. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny, breezy, turning warmer today, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 35. Thursday, variably cloudy. A shower is possible. Otherwise, warmer conditions with a high around 60. Thursday evening, skies turning mostly cloudy. A chance for showers with a low around 40. And then on Friday, chance of showers cooler with a high around 55. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 26 degrees under clear skies. Lambert Fields reporting 28. The wind chill outside makes it feel like it's about 15, so bundle up if you're going outside. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the top of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
Another powerful interview is set for Friday morning here on the Wake Up Call. Shoddy screening procedures cause tens of thousands of hemophiliacs to become infected with AIDS and hepatitis during the 1980s. Today, half of those people are now dead. Journalist Stacy Milbauer wrote a book about the ordeal some of the survivors went through and also found some shocking reasons, mostly monetary greed, as to why it happened. Dying in Vain, that's V-E-I-N, with author Stacy Milbauer. Another revealing story you'll hear only on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, Friday morning at 8.
Tired of talking to the wall, the TV, the puppy?
Here, Fido.
314-454-0400, 1-877-920-WGNU. Give us a call. We'll listen.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Pulitzer Prize-winning news correspondent Peter Arnett will be our special guest on the wake-up call Wednesday morning at 9. He's been around the world and has a broad perspective to draw upon. From the 13 years he covered the Vietnam conflict to the 18 he spent with CNN. He was the first Western reporter to interview Osama bin Laden back in 1997. Peter Arnett has some interesting thoughts about our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he'll share them with you on the Wake Up Call, Wednesday morning at 9. It's the information you need to know about but can't find anywhere else on the dial. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get up, get up, get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Well, hello.
Turn your radio down, please.
Good morning, Miss Brown. How are you this beautiful day?
I'm wonderful.
Good. I just can hardly hear you. You there? Yeah, we got something. We got Medicaid cut out of this deal. New thieves was born. And Bush ended up with a gold pistol hanging on his wall that he say he's going to keep for a souvenir. And we got gas hikes. That's what we got for our money over in Iraq. We ain't getting nothing.
Okay.
But our young men and women's getting killed over there for nothing. And when they leave, it's going to be the same Iraq. No different. Nothing going to change. It's ridiculous that American people is just going along with this stupid that this president is throwing up in their face. So you have a good day, Miss Brown.
Thanks for your call. 454-0400 is my phone number. Cell phone.
Good morning, Miss Brown.
Good morning.
A couple of things. Our superintendent of schools yesterday was talking about how much of a success this thing is going to be, but because he said you could use the state of Philadelphia as an example of how well it's working there. And I sat there for a second. I said, wow, it's a new state, huh? Philadelphia. That was pretty bright of him. Also, after the election, I guess democracy is taking hold in Iraq because I guess they're getting ready for tourism and anybody can walk the streets freely and go to an outside cafe. And yet now they're saying Abramoff, they sat down and had a meeting with George W. Bush, and they were going to talk about what the meeting was about. We're going to be forthcoming, but now they decided not to talk about what was the legislation that he was talking to the president about. Now, it is so – now, I understand privacy. I don't need to let people know what me and my neighbor talks about. That's none of their business, but this is our country. And
no,
they are
no, wait a minute. No, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. If he can spy on us, then we surely can know what's going on in his meeting. There is no privacy under this administration. So on the one hand, he wants to take away our privacy, and the other hand, he wants to protect his. You can't have it both ways.
I still want to see who sat down with that energy meeting with Mr. With his pacemaker guy. What's that guy's name? Well, anyway.
Cheney.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah, but his foot is bothering him now, so let's get a man a break. All right. Have a good day.
454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Hi, Ms. Brown. I have a question. One of the things that I haven't heard discussed with these Supreme Court nominations is the whole idea of a position for life. Can you tell me why a Supreme Court judge is given a position for life rather than for a specified term?
Well, they say that the argument that is made in defense of lifetime appointments, and it's not just Supreme Court judges, federal judges also have lifetime appointments. The theory behind it is that you, if you know that you're going to have job security, then you can act with a certain amount of independence, with a lot of independence, because you're no longer beholden to anybody. You know, you don't have any fear that you are going to lose your job. And so that's what they're saying, that it contributes to judicial independence.
So is there any way that any way at all that a judge can be, a Supreme Court or a federal judge can be removed from office?
I suppose if he murdered another federal judge, that would be one way. Outside of committing a crime, a high crime or misdemeanor, outside of committing a crime, I don't know of any other way.
All righty, thank you.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. You're on the wake up call. Good morning.
Yes.
Yes, Clark.
This war has brought on the American people family bereavement, and its actual costs can guarantee socialized medicine inside the United States of America. It is truly amazing. Its cost can guarantee every child a free education, college education. Thank you.
You're welcome. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. A lot of times I wonder, since it's my job to deal with these things and address these things, I just wonder sometimes, how deep does the foulness well go? How dirty are these people willing to get? You heard of this woman. I'm sure a lot of you know all the players on the Patriots team. You know the quarterbacks, you know their scores, you know how much men you've never met weigh and how tall they are. That's kind of absurd to me, but I won't go there. But have you heard about this woman by the name of Italia Ferdici? This is a young woman. Long blonde hair. She is the executive director of a environmental organization, the Coalition of Republicans for Environmental Advocacy, CREA, C-R-E-A, founded in 1997 by Grover Norquist and the current Secretary of Interior, Gail Norton. Federici worked on Norton's 1996 Senate campaign. I guess, maybe I just need to have a face-to-face, a sit-down with Native Americans. Because it seems like some of this money making you stupid. CREA wouldn't exist but for the funding from huge donations from Native American tribes. So you're funding a bunch of Republicans who say they're about environmental? Sweetie, I need to sit down with y'all because that money made you stupid. That money made you stupid. This organization, let me just tell you what this organization has done. November 16th, Ferdici had been, finally, they caught her. She's a fast runner because she was dodging a subpoena for a number of days. The Senate Indian Affairs Committee finally heard her testimony about the involvement of Jack Abramoff and her contacts with Gail Norton's Deputy Interior Secretary, Stephen Griles. Hundreds of emails obtained by the committee documented Ferdici's role as a fixer working for Abramoff. Abramoff declaring that she had juice in the interior, asked her to get Griles, that would be the Interior Secretary's the Interior Secretary, Deputy Interior Secretary, Stephen Griles, asked her to get Griles to put the kibosh on a rival casino that threatened one of his tribal clients, telling her to call Griles and ask him to hold up an environmental impact statement on another rival casino. And in return for this constant stream of favors, Abramoff had his tribal clients donate $500,000 to Cree. And when Senator McCain asked Ferdici what the tribes would do with her group's environmental mission, she came up with a laughably inane and certifiably insulting response saying, well, Native Americans have always been associated with the environment. And black folks can dance, right? You know, just a racist statement. Just a racist statement. And under questioning, she finally admitted that she had never met with any of the tribal donors to find out what their environmental issues were. In fact, she had been told by Abramoff that the tribes, quote, don't want to be bothered to meet with her. Ooh, how deep does this foulness well go? An environmental advocacy group formed by Republicans. What could that possibly have to do with anything positive? Republicans don't believe that there's global warming. I don't know. It snowed 2 days ago. It's supposed to be 60 degrees tomorrow. What do you think? It's been raining for 26 days straight in Seattle. What do you think? How about this? There are 10 feet of snow in Japan. Hundreds of thousands of people have been stranded by blizzards in China. And India has a frost that has made headlines. Huh? No global warming. No global warming. 10 feet of snow in Japan. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Whoo, we need to get up. You need to get up. You need to get to me. Stay with me.
It does not know defeat until it finds and knows the presence of truth. In every soul, there is a memory, a standing tall, the proudest we could be. I cannot fall, for I recall we were born in majesty.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline London. Former Secretary of State Colin Powell says the United States made mistakes when it decided to invade Iraq nearly 3 years ago. Powell told the BBC yesterday in an interview that the intelligence community was wrong and he presented wrong information based on what they had at the time. He was asked by the reporter conducting the interview if he wanted to apologize for misleading the world. Powell answered that he misled no one, that he presented America's case on the best information that was available at the time. And Dateline Washington. Earlier this week, we mentioned that Vice President Dick Cheney is using a number of connections to ensure the next Prime Minister of Israel is Benjamin Netanyahu. The reason why has now been made more clear. Netanyahu has reportedly committed to having Israel make a confrontation with Syria to enact a regime change similar to the one the U.S. committed in Iraq. But it's also a way to take pressure off the mounting scandals in the GOP, especially the Jack Abramoff lobbyist debacle, which is threatening to be a widespread morass for the GOP. But this whole scenario could unravel because Cheney is apparently as tightly entwined with Jack Abramoff as is Netanyahu, in a web of money laundering, tax-exempt charity abuse, and no-bid contractors. Newsweek magazine reported last August that prosecutors decided to move quickly and arrest Abramoff that same month because they were concerned he was going to flee to Israel, the same thing that two of his business partners had already done. There's also word that Abramoff has connections to a Russian oil company that laundered $1 million through another of his hand-picked charities by way of a London legal firm. Two of the oil company's top executives met with Tom DeLay just before that money changed hands. and some of the military hardware that got sent to settlers on the West Bank has been identified as coming from Russia. This is your wake-up call global news update. Another powerful interview is set for Friday morning here on the wake-up call. Shoddy screening procedures caused tens of thousands of hemophiliacs to become infected with AIDS and hepatitis during the 1980s. Today, half of those people are now dead. Journalist Stacy Milbauer wrote a book about the ordeal some of the survivors went through and also found some shocking reasons, mostly monetary greed, as to why it happened. Dying in Vain, that's V-E-I-N, with author Stacy Milbauer. Another revealing story you'll hear only on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, Friday morning at 8.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger with a personal invitation for you to join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on WGNU. It is so great to be back in the St. Louis area, and I'm looking forward to talking with you here at Radio Free St. Louis about your personal, work, and family problems and issues. Dial 1-800-DR-LAURA, that's 1-800-DR-LAURA, and let's take on the day. Join me, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, 2 to 4, Monday through Friday afternoons on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
Use your exercise bike for more than a clothes rack. Find out how by attending the St. Clair Life Fitness Fair, 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m., Friday and Saturday, January 20th and 21st, and from noon to 6, Sunday, January 22nd, at St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. More than just another health fair, it's a showcase for retailers, service groups, healthcare professionals, and fitness pros, all ready to help you get in shape and improve your life. Night Magic Entertainment brings you music all weekend long. WGNU will be broadcasting from the fair on Friday. See a variety of singers, dancers, aerobic demonstrations. Enjoy a healthy snack. Stop by the center court to register for one of dozens of great prizes. Come on, you can do it. Get moving to the St. Clair Life Fitness Fair, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Hosted by St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Sponsored in part by Night Magic Entertainment and Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Get more details at spcshows.com. This is a Specialized Promotional Contest production.
Pulitzer Prize-winning news correspondent Peter Arnett will be our special guest on the Wake Up Call Wednesday morning at 9. He's been around the world and has a broad perspective to draw upon, from the 13 years he covered the Vietnam conflict to the 18 he spent with CNN. He was the first Western reporter to interview Osama bin Laden back in 1997. Peter Arnett has some interesting thoughts about our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he'll share them with you on the Wake Up Call Wednesday morning at 9. What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Down by the river, taking off my shoes, jumping in the water, washing away these blues. Now into the ocean, current takes hold. Words already been spoken, tales already been told, hearts already been broken, wounds already been healed. Do you wanna be loved? Do you wanna be loved for real? Do you wanna be loved?
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning.
Yes, I would like to ask you what is your take or assessment on the comments that they're making all this hoopla over the comments that Ray Nagin made down in New Orleans, and then there's a big deal being made about Hillary Clinton calling the GOP politics like the plantation. What is your assessment on that? Your opinion?
I haven't heard the comment that specific comment about from Hillary Clinton. I don't know about that comment. I'd have to read it in its context. I don't trust anything that she says. I don't believe in anything that she says. So my instinct and my experience with Hillary Clinton is that I probably wouldn't appreciate it. That would be my guess, but I haven't seen him. With regard to Nagin's response, we played a little bit of it yesterday on the air, but there's a lot more to it than he wanted New Orleans to return to a chocolate city. He also talked about how God was punishing, it was a wake-up call punishment for black people, that black people weren't taking care of black people, and that somehow God was going after black people because of what black people have done. That's absurd. And you know what I think? I think that in some respects that Nagin has gone a little crazy. I because we remember when one of the things that, well, I don't know if you know this, but when there was a hearing in front of the Black Caucus after people from New Orleans were shipped off to Houston, Maxine Waters asked Ray Nagin, why did you have this midnight meeting with all of these white Dallas businessmen once you got to Houston? Is there some kind of secret organization that has been created in an effort to give the land and cut the deals for these white business people? And when Nagin came into office, he came into office with the funding from money of people outside of the community of African descent. Mm-hmm. And he was not particularly liked by mm-hmm. black folks in the city of New Orleans. New Orleans is one of the most racist cities in the United States. You know that black people, when they would go to the Bourbon Street and go down to the Mardi Gras, black people were routinely charged more money for drinks than white folks were. Mm-hmm. That there was a big incident where when black kids tried to get into to the saloons and stuff, they were treated differently than white kids were. A big incident where a young black kid was killed, beaten to death by security guards at one of the bars right before New Orleans. So I think that Ray has gone a little crazy. Because I think that the stress of this thing has brought all of these conflicting components together in him. On the one hand, he wants to deliver. It appears that he wants to deliver for the interest that brought him to the dance. And on the other hand, he has all of the. He's seen how black folks, or it has been. He is clear now on what government thinks of, what this government thinks of people of African descent. So I think he's a little bit nuts right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. Have a good day, sir.
All right. Well, what did you think of it?
Well, I guess, it's not the first time that with the part about black people being punished, I didn't too much agree with. But a part about it's not the first time that people have said America's been punished with hurricanes and stuff. I mean, I've heard that preached many times by different people before.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that part, I've even said that you know, God would use the, you know, natural forces against America in order to punish it for different things it's done in the past and what America is doing now. So that's not the first time I heard people say that. But the part about black folks being punished, I don't think. The people who lost all of their homes
and their babies
and their livelihood would appreciate that too much.
All right, now thanks for your call.
All right,
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. My toll free long distance number is 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Clarence.
Hey, how are you this morning?
I'm outstanding.
Praise the Lord for that. Yeah, you know, I agree with your comment on the mayor over there in Louisiana. I was sharing that with one of my coworkers that, you know, this is one of the things that happens when disaster happens. People get a little upset when you don't take care of business like you claim that you're supposed to be doing. And this here brought out that thing. And I agree with you. That mayor is a little bit nuts right now because he's he's really concerned about his people, and he's seeing all of this nonsense going on.
But he's still delivering for the other for interests outside of the community.
That's right.
So that's gonna make you crazy.
It is.
It should make you crazy.
Yeah.
It should. Okay. It should make you crazy. He ain't right yet.
All right. You have a good day.
Take care of yourself, Linda.
Yes. How are you?
I'm outstanding. We have a few seconds here.
Okay, well, I just started listening to your program, and I'm very impressed by it. I'm on my way to work. I just want to say people will take things from the Bible and quote it to their own personal gain. In Matthew, the 25th chapter, it says these things are going to happen. But we cannot take these things and apply it to just one race, because a lot of people were distraught by that situation, not just black people. New Orleans just happened to be more populated with black people. That's all I need to say, and I enjoy your program very much.
Thank you, Linda. We're going to take a break and come back with St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Peter Downs is going to be joining us this morning, and I believe also Bill Purdy will be here. Stay with us.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. Time may be running out for an American journalist who was kidnapped in Iraq. ABC's Heather Nauert has details from Baghdad.
28-year-old Jill Carroll appeared to be speaking on the tape that aired on Al Jazeera, but the network did not broadcast what she was saying, nor would they divulge the source of the video. According to Al Jazeera, her captors threatened to kill the American journalist unless U.S. troops release Iraqi female prisoners within 72 hours. Carroll's family issued a statement saying, "We ask that you please show her mercy and allow her to return home to her family."
Carroll is a freelance writer. She was on assignment for the Christian Science Monitor at the time. Expect a quick congressional challenge to yesterday's Supreme Court decision that upheld Oregon's physician-assisted suicide law. Oregon Senator Ron Wyden says he'll fight to keep it. Democrats outlined their new ethics plan today. It prohibits members of Congress from accepting gifts, meals, or travel from lobbyists. The GOP is working on its own rules. Members of Congress are also cutting their ties quickly to questionable groups. Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy has quit the exclusive OWL social club. Could be a jittery day for the stock market if what happened in Tokyo is any indication.
It all began when tech bellwethers Intel and Yahoo disappointed Wall Street. That deepened concern about the technology sector spilling into Asian markets and now into European markets. A flood of sell orders overwhelmed the Tokyo Stock Exchange computers, triggering an early close of trading. Add to that worry about accounting problems at a startup internet company Livedoor, and sharply higher oil prices.
That's ABC News business correspondent Gary Nunn. Britain's Sun newspaper is blaming a father's rights group for plotting to kidnap the youngest son of Prime Minister Tony Blair. Not true, says member John Ison.
We completely condemn the suggestion of kidnapping Leo Blair. As a father myself, I can imagine the horror that my children would go through if this happened to them.
The paper says the group wanted greater access for dads who don't have custody of their kids. This is ABC News.
Walmart and Sam's Club have teamed up with Humana to provide you with all the information you need about the new Medicare prescription drug benefit. Enroll today. Log on to walmart.com/Medicare or talk with your Walmart pharmacist or Humana sales representative. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies accept all Medicare prescription drug benefit plans. Medicare-approved HMO, PPO, and PFFS plans available to anyone enrolled in Part B and entitled to Part A of Medicare through age or disability. Co-payment, service area, and benefit limitations may apply.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
Here they are, all the way from Liverpool.
There are thousands marching on Washington as
a generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477. Ameriprise Financial Services, member NASD and SIPC.
No down payment, no problem. The National Association of Realtors says nearly half of all home buyers put little or no money down on new homes last year. The advantage, more ownership. The downside, they could be paying more for their homes than they're worth. We know medicine is not one size fits all. ABC's John McKenzie says scientists are also learning that it's not the same for men or women either.
Blood thinners, the widely used drug Coumadin, they have a much more powerful effect in women also taking oral contraceptives or in the middle of their menstrual period when estrogen levels are at their highest. So dosages may have to be reduced. Pain medications, injuries in women often trigger much more inflammation than in men. So women may require more of an anti-inflammatory drug, such as ibuprofen.
Researchers plan to do even more on the study. Can you imagine being hired just on the basis of your looks? Well, a group of women who work for a German investment bank say they were and that they've been denied promotions because of it. They're suing. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
For another update of WGNU News, I'm Peyton Colston reporting. This update is brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. In the news, 30 people are under federal indictment for their alleged involvement in a Wellston drug trafficking network. 20 of the suspects, including alleged ringleader LaFrance Wilson of Wellston, have been arrested. Catherine Hanaway, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri, says she and law enforcement officials are sending a message to the people of Wellston.
Federal, state, and local officials are doing all that we can to rid Wellston of the open and notorious criminal behavior taking place there. And the fact that 30 individuals have been indicted should be the strongest sign that there is no safe haven in Wellston for drug dealers.
A civilian employee of the Berkeley Police Department is among those under indictment. That employee has been suspended from her job as a records custodian and is accused of passing information about the investigation to the alleged drug dealers. In other news, a group opposed to public funding for the new Bush Stadium is planning to take its case to the Missouri Supreme Court. The Coalition Against Public Funding for Stadiums wants a public vote on the annual St. Louis County bond payments for the new ballpark. The Eastern Missouri Court of Appeals ruled yesterday that the group's charter amendment calling for a countywide vote cannot affect the bond issue for the new Cardinals Stadium. The coalition says it will appeal that ruling. In Florissant, Mayor Robert Lowry's taking Laclede Gas to task over the company's planned personnel cutbacks. Lowry says cuts to the people who read meters and perform safety inspections could lead to more gas explosions in homes and businesses. He's asking Laclede to explain how it will still provide adequate safety inspection service despite the cuts. And former U.S. House Speaker Newt Gingrich is in Jefferson City today to speak to the Missouri Senate. Gingrich will address the Senate this morning during its regular session. He will discuss the work of his Center for Health Transformation, which he says is aimed at creating an intelligent health system to save both lives and money. That report of WGNU News was brought to you by your Greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, winterize your car at your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer. Radiator drain and fill, visual inspection and battery check, all for $39.95. That's Toyota value. See dealer for details. With WGNU News, I'm Peyton Colston.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton. We'll look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Eastbound 44 on the ramp to northbound 141. Look for an accident that's been cleared. It's on the shoulder, but there are no delays. Westbound 270 between 170 and Lindbergh. There's an accident. Left lane is blocked. Traffic jams all the way at New Halls Ferry. Eastbound 70 between Bermuda and Lucas and Hunter. A disabled vehicle reported in the left lane. Eastbound 270 at McDonald Boulevard and Lindbergh. Left lane is blocked due to a westbound accident due to a short backup. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Lindbergh. Look for heavy volume going on there. Northbound 270 from Gravois to 44 is slow. Eastbound 70 at T.R. Hughes and 79. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 5570 between 4th Street and the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 64 to 5570 merge. Look for slow traffic as well. Westbound King Bridge traffic from the Gravel Pit all the way on to Laclede's Landing. Very heavy volume this morning. Northbound Route 3 onto the Poplar Street Bridge. Those ramps are looking good. 14th and Shoto. Lights aren't working. They have stop signs up. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for a rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery. Have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny, breezy, turning warmer, high around 50 today. Partly cloudy with a low around 35. Thursday, variably cloudy, otherwise a shower possible, and a high around 60. Thursday evening, Sky's turning mostly cloudy. Chance of showers with a low around 40. Then on Friday, chance of showers cooler with a high around 55. Currently, at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 27 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 28. The wind chill out there makes it feel like it's 16. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call is up next. St. Louis Schools watches up with Peter Downs. That comes up next. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 7 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, tell me, sister. Our power. Please do not ask for power. Nobody is going to give it to you. You were born with power.
Some very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember?
Say that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress. The progress is healing the wound that's below knee.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air. Tell me, brother, help me, sister.
Is that not everyone is sharing in this city's splendor and glory. There are more poor than ever, more families in trouble, more and more people who need help but can't find it. A struggle against the common enemies of man, tyranny, poverty, disease, and war itself.
We believe that all men are created equal. Yet many are denied equal
freedom. And so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly in-depth look at developments affecting the education of our children.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to St. Louis Public Schools Watch. This is Liz Brown, and I believe that we have much, 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 much to talk about this morning. Peter, welcome back to the studio.
Well, thank you, Liz. Good morning.
It's good to have you here, and we also have school board member Bill Purdy with us this morning. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Liz.
Peter, let's start with you, and let's start with the school board meeting last night. Things were done a little differently last night.
Yes, yes. There's a regular school board meeting last night, and Mr. Purdy asked some questions, which is why we have him on the show this morning.
Mm-hmm.
There's something, the school board, they call it a consent agenda. It's a lot of contractual items that the superintendent, a lot of money that the superintendent asked the board to approve spending. And Mr. Purdy asked questions on 15 or 16 of those different items.
Well, let's back up just a little bit and give people a little bit of background on the consent agenda. Every single time that the school board meets, they go over their consent agenda. And it's basically, if you have a contract with the school board, this is the time that the school board votes on it to say yes or no to that contract.
Yes.
And generally speaking, Bill, it's about anything over $5,000. Is that pretty much the
anything over $5,000 must go to the board. A contract for $5,000 or more must go to the board.
And then the board members must vote on it to approve.
The board members must vote to approve it.
And so last night, and normally it's one of those things that is just agendas can have as many as how many items on it? 60, 70, 100?
Unlimited.
So we have hundreds of items on a consent agenda. And normally the process is that the school board members have had an opportunity to go through it, and they look at it prior to that, and then if a school board member wants to discuss a particular item, they pull it. They pull it, and then they pull it to talk about it at the school board meeting.
In public,
okay. So.
Right. Yeah, normally it's they rubber stamp the consent agenda. Really, it's kind of like buying a Christmas tree that's already decorated with everything. They just take the whole package and say, yeah, we approve all these in one motion. And so if a school board member has a question about, you know, one of the lights on the Christmas tree, they pull that light to look at it and approve all the rest.
Mm-hmm. And that's prior to coming to the meeting, they pull the items.
No, at the meeting they will say, I want to pull item 5,
okay.
You know, or whatever the item is.
And so, most of the time we have one or two or three items that have been pulled for discussion, but a lot of the times it's just you take the whole package.
Right.
So last night what happened? What was different last night?
Last night, Ms. Purdy pulled,
16 of 40.
16 of 40 of the items. And how was that received by the other school board members?
Robert Archibald, one of the school board members, got up and picked up his coat and started to walk out.
He did a Vince Shamel.
He started to do a Vince Shamel. Somebody realized that if he left, I should say that there were two school board members who were absent last night for illness, Veronica O'Brien and Jim Buford. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of working majority school board is five people. One of those was absent, brings down to four. You need four votes to pass anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if Archibald had left,
as he wanted to,
they wouldn't have had the four votes unless they could get Mr. Purdy to agree with them.
And if I can just kind of get a sense of this, Archibald, he picked up his coat.
Yes.
And he picked up his hat, and he walked off the stage.
Yes, he walked to the side. Nobody out in the audience could see him. He, as far as we could tell, he walked off the stage.
Did he express anything prior to his leaving?
No. He just picked up his stuff and walked out.
So the conclusion is that he left because they had to sit there and talk about some items that were on the on the agenda. So they called him back in. Somebody motioned him back in or got him to come back in.
Yeah, for 10-15 minutes he wasn't visible. But apparently he had somebody had stopped him out there before he left, and he came back the only way we knew he was still there is they started voting on some of the items, mm-hmm. and they were crediting him with a vote. They called his name and credited him with a vote, and you know, people announced it, looking around, where is he? How come they're calling his name and giving him a yes vote? But it turned out he was standing out in the wings somewhere, and then he came back and put his stuff back down on the table and sat back down in his chair.
And, Bill, why did you decide to pull those 16 items? Why was that important to you?
Well, there were a variety of very specific items that were coming before the board, many contracts. Some of the contracts were very puzzling, contracts being issued to higher bidders. Contracts.
Wait a minute. The bidding process is supposed to determine the lowest responsible bid. And you found contracts that the contract was led to the person that's the highest bidder?
Yes, and there can be, under certain circumstances, legitimate reasons for
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
But the board members were not told any reason why that was the recommendation of the administration.
And so, these recommendations come from, the I guess the process is that it goes to the person that sits in the seat of the superintendent. He's the one that looks over the contracts, and he's the one that gives them to the board, and then the board looks at them, and the board decides whether to approve them. So they came from Craig Williams' office and Craig Williams' decisions.
Basically that, and also from Sodexo, because now they have a big role to play in this process. I can't explain what that role is.
What do you mean?
Well, that's what I mean. Sodexo is the management company that deals with construction issues, and so they play a role. I can't tell you, because I don't know exactly what role they play, but I know they're a big part of it. It's a very messy situation.
So give us some examples of some of the items that were of concern to you, and the reason why you pulled some of these items.
Well, there were two items right at the top of the agenda, items 4 and 5, that dealt with cafeteria furniture and another window treatments or window shades for some of our school buildings. The documentation that was presented to the board was very puzzling. For example, in both instances, there was only one provider that submitted a bid for cafeteria furniture. Now, that's unbelievable to me that somewhere out in this big country of ours that there aren't multiple companies that sell furniture for cafeterias.
How much money was this bill?
We're talking about $386,000.
$300,000, over $250,000.
That's just for the cafeteria furniture.
For one bidder. And who puts together the package to write out what the bid is going to involve?
Well, it directly comes to the board from the Office of Operations, mm-hmm. Of the district. Also, there was nothing that was provided to the board about minority participation in any of these contracts.
And explain what the board's obligation is to MBEs.
25-5.
25-5.
And there was no indication at all that there was any kind of following that policy. And then I guess it was explained last night, but I still am not completely of understanding. We used to use the city for city services, city resources for determining the qualifications of these firms. Now all of this is flowing through the airport authority.
Huh?
Yeah, the airport authority.
Huh?
That was on all of the information given to the board that the airport authority now determines the minority participation.
Well, okay, so let's just kind of back up a little bit. Peter, sounds like we're hearing information for the first time now about how business is being done at the St. Louis Public Schools.
Yes, and to tie in with your earlier question, Ron Jackson and Anna Kleinscale really and I took Purdy to the woodshed for letting this information out in the public.
And Darnetta Klingstell is running for re-election.
Yes.
And she took exception to a public discussion about the way that public money is being spent for the public schools.
Yes, Ron Jackson first brought it up. He said to Purdy, he said, you could have had these questions answered, you know, a week ago, but you're bringing them up here in public. And Purdy said, yes, that's what I choose to do. You know, and Darnetta said, she tried to explain to the audience. She said, we have a process here with an administrative meeting and a superintendent who has made staff available for board members to approach individually if they have questions. And you're supposed to get your questions answered before coming to this meeting so that we don't have to spend time on questions at this meeting.
And, well, let me ask this. I imagine then she was responding to a whole lot of complaints from the audience that they were hearing this information about how their money was being spent, right? Was the audience unhappy with the fact that there was some actual discussion about where their money was being spent?
No, I don't think the audience was unhappy that there was discussion
how
their money was being spent. No. There was some audience participation, some shouts of encouragement to Bill when he asked questions.
What were they saying? What were folks saying?
I don't think I can quote exactly. Okay, you know, they're just kind of those shouts like, you know, yeah, what is that? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, the kind of shouts people are saying with, information's coming out, and they're like, you know, wow, what's going on here?
And we I guess this has always been a board since Darnetta became the president, and Vince Schemel and Slay put these people in. There's always been the question, the concern that you and I have had, Peter, about the secrecy and the decisions that are being made without public input. So last night we actually had board members confess, if you will, that it is never their desire for the public to hear about. In fact, it's wrong that the policies in the St. Louis public schools is that the public never hears how their money is being spent. All of these discussions are supposed to be made with the superintendent, not in front of the public.
That's right. That's right. We really had that confession last night.
So one of the things that also, Bill, that you brought up was this thing about one-person bid for shades.
Window shades.
And Peter, talk to us about window shades. And this was another $300,000 contract. So,
yes.
So far we have almost $1 million worth of contracts given out to one bidders. And with no MBE participation at all, no record of any MBE being contacted at all, because shades are not a difficult thing. And furniture for cafeteria is not a difficult thing for an MBE to get in on. Tell us about the story, the issue about the window shades is significant, isn't it, Peter?
Yes. There are a lot of things, as you pointed, a lot of points here. But one of the things about window shades is the board used to have a shade maker on staff. When the school district did its own building maintenance in-house, they had somebody on staff to make shades for these, 100 school buildings. So you had 100 school buildings, lots of windows on each. Just wear and tear, you constantly have shades needing to be replaced.
Children.
Yes.
They're dealing with children, so yeah.
Yeah, so you had somebody on staff, so then they outsourced it to Sodexo, and one of the things Sodexo did is they stopped making window shades. So this caused this.
Well, how do you outsource and then they stop doing it? What are you outsourcing? You know?
Right, but that's, so this $300,000 is really part of the cost of using Sodexo. And we've talked often about how trying to figure out how much the district is spending, you can't look just at Sodexo's own contract because they aren't doing as much as the district used to do itself. This is an example. You have Sodexo's contract plus contracts like this.
And again, how much money are we spending on Sodexo? How many millions?
We are spending $60 million in 5 years.
$60 million, and we're so far, this $300,000 contract is another example of additional costs that have resulted as a result of the decision to hire, to privatize, and
right.
to get rid of our in-house people.
Right. A couple of people, the business manager of Station Engineers, told me last week, he just said, looking at the contract, and he's looking at the amount of profit specified in the contract, that over the 5 years, the district is spending $15 million more with Sodexo than it would to do its work itself.
Mm.
And we now know with things like this that it's more than $15 million more.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And one of the other items that you pulled for discussion, Bill, was the item about tuck pointing. How much was that bid? Was there more than one bidder for that?
Yeah, there were. There were four. There were four bidders, but we took the highest bidder of the four. It was tuck pointing, exterior tuck pointing at Scruggs, Bryan Hill, and Turner Middle. And there was no explanation as to why the highest bidder was selected. And also, it was another one of the many contracts that did not have any record of any WBE or MBE data at all. It was
now
presented to the board.
One of the things I keep forgetting, and maybe it's just, I don't know, repression on my part. Craig Williams is also at the board meeting, isn't he? Isn't he? As the person that's supposed to be the superintendent, he's at the board meeting, right?
Yes, yes.
And his job is to explain these decisions because he would have more detail than anybody sitting at the board because he gets paid $300,000 a year to be in charge of this. So when the question was asked, why was there only one bid for this $300,000 contract for shades, what was Craig Williams' explanation?
Well, he didn't say anything on that. He had
Shut up.
Okay.
He didn't say anything?
He didn't say anything. Gary Huey, the director of operations, up there to answer questions on that. And, no, actually, that was the second one where Bill brought up, that there was only one bid. And I take that, but Williams did say something. He said that they had complied with the bid requirement, with the bid policies of the board.
And what does that mean? That the bid policies of the board allow for only one bid?
Bill would know more about that than I do, but he was in trying to understand why there was only one bid. Bill was asking, "What'd you do? Where'd you advertise it? Who'd you go after
and
get
what,
these?"
And what?
And Williams said, "Well, we complied with the bid policies of the board."
Was that a satisfactory answer to you?
No.
Is that the type of answer that you have gotten in the past of other superintendents when you've asked questions like that?
No, absolutely not. In fact, it's not uncommon for a single bidder to bid on some unique piece of equipment. I mean, purely unique piece of equipment. That isn't totally unusual. But for a common product like window shades, like lunchroom furniture, or student desks, those are rather common. And you would expect dozens of bidders. In fact, I remember seeing data in the past years where we might have 20 vendors who submit a bid. And sometimes the bids, when they're evaluated by our staff, perhaps the lowest bid is not the best bid,
mm-hmm.
because it perhaps doesn't meet common specifications, or maybe the quality isn't up to the standard.
Or they don't have enough manpower to do
this. Or they don't have the ability to perform.
Sure.
But there must be an explanation given to the board when you vote on it. If there is an amount of money that is listed in the bid as being smaller, but you're rejecting it, then I think the board, to meet its fiduciary responsibility, should know what that is, what that reason is.
Did anybody else on the board seem to care or raise a question?
No, they seemed to be frustrated that I was asking questions. These are public issues, Liz, and the public needs to know. And that's the reason I raised the issues, not just to grandstand or raise the issues just for the sake of raising them, but these are legitimate public issues that deserve an airing before the public.
All of the school board members have a fiduciary responsibility, don't they, Bill?
They do.
They're supposed to be watching the dollars that go to educate the children of our city.
Correct.
So when Craig Williams explained, In response to your question of where were the bids posted, where were they advertised, who bid for them, and he said we complied with the law. When he answered in that way, that's not a satisfactory answer.
No, it isn't. It isn't. And he has a staff there that implements it. Someone should have been able to stand at the microphone and say, We put our advertisements here, 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 and here. And so you felt comfortable that it was widely advertised so that any vendor who had an interest or the ability to supply that product had a fair and open opportunity to submit their bid.
Is there a concern that that the district is not complying with the law? Is there a law that says that because this is public money, these are public bids, that they are supposed to be advertising in a certain way? Do you know?
I don't know. But I suspect that there is. I don't know that.
So what's the next step? I mean, what could be done in order to get additional information about where these contracts were advertised? Where there was information about it?
Well, all I know is last night the board voted to approve those items. They did, and next month when we meet again, I will be asking questions. I hope that the data that's presented to all of us now is better and is legitimate next time. I expect they might be a little more careful in putting together whatever it is they give us to vote on. But
and just quickly, please, because we have to go to a break, how much money was approved by this board last night to be spent, about roughly?
Liz, I don't know. I don't have that
over
figure.
$1 million.
Oh, easily
over $10 million.
Over $10 million.
Easily over $10 million.
Over $10 million.
I mean, the cafeteria furniture shades approaches $1 million.
And how much was the tuck pointing?
It was. I don't have it right in front of me. I don't know.
We're going to take a break, folks. This is Liz Brown. I'm here with Peter Downs. This is St. Louis Public Schools Watch. We'll get to some of your calls, some of your questions as we continue our discussion. Stay with us.
Good morning, Miss Liz. This is Amir Mahoney calling you from LaCree School, second grade, from with you. Miss Lewis, our class is watching Roots. Cooter Kitty knows his roots. His mother name is Pippa, and his father name is Amaru. Kitty has dignity. Have a good summer. This is Amir Muhammad from Room 209, where dignity reigns supreme. Love you.
Love you.
What a wonderful world.
Good morning, St. Louis. 34 minutes after the hour, 7 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Moulton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Northbound 270 between Gravois and 44, the accident's been cleared to the right shoulder. Traffic jams near Route 21. Eastbound 270 at 170, look for an accident reported. Northbound 55 at Merrimack Bottom Road and River de Pere, look for normal traffic. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Lindbergh, look for heavy volume going on there. Eastbound 70 is bumper to bumper from Brian McKay, and then from T.R. Hughes to 79 is also stacked up pretty good. Westbound 270 between 367 and 170. Look for stop-and-go traffic due to an earlier accident. Eastbound 40 slows from 141 Mason Road. Westbound 64 at 5570. Look for slow traffic there. Westbound 5570 from Exchange onto the PSB. Look for stop-and-go traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at the Gravel Pit and Laclede's Landing. Slow traffic there. Northbound Route 3 at Poplar Street Bridge. Everything's running smoothly. 14th and Shoto. Look for those traffic lights not to be working. Grand and Lindell, there's an injury accident. Arlington at Ridge Avenue, there's an accident reportedly involving a school bus. We'll keep you up to date as we become available on that. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, winterize your car at a St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer. Radiator drain and fill, visual inspection, and battery check, all for just $39.95. That's Toyota Value. See dealer for details. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. For today, partly sunny, breezy, turning warmer, high around 50. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 35. Thursday, variably cloudy, shower possible, high around 60. Thursday evening, skies turning mostly cloudy, a chance of showers with a low around 40. Then on Friday, chance of showers, cooler with a high around 55. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 28 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 28 as well, both under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. St. Louis Schools Watch with Peter Downs. That's on the way. We'll take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Moulton for AM 920 WGNU.
Another powerful interview is set for Friday morning here on the wake-up call. Shoddy screening procedures cause tens of thousands of hemophiliacs to become infected with AIDS and hepatitis during the 1980s. Today, half of those people are now dead. Journalist Stacy Milbauer wrote a book about the ordeal some of the survivors went through and also found some shocking reasons, mostly monetary greed, as to why it happened. Dying in Vain, that's V-E-I-N, with author Stacy Milbauer. Another revealing story you'll hear only on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, Friday morning at 8. What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues during the 2005-2006 African American History Series. This Saturday, January 21st, Dr. Michael Benjamin will explore how early librarian Daniel Murray sought to preserve African American culture. Reservations are required. Call 314-361-9017. Prior to the program, attendees may purchase breakfast at the Missouri History Museum's award-winning restaurant, Merriweather's. Breakfast is $6 for the general public, $5 for Missouri Historical Society members. The presentation is free to all. Breakfast served at 9 a.m. The presentation begins at 10 a.m. For more information, visit www.mohistory.org.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenahan from 4 to 6.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Pulitzer Prize-winning news correspondent Peter Arnett will be our special guest on the wake-up call Wednesday morning at 9. He's been around the world and has a broad perspective to draw upon. From the 13 years he covered the Vietnam conflict to the 18 he spent with CNN. He was the first Western reporter to interview Osama bin Laden back in 1997. Peter Arnett has some interesting thoughts about our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he'll share them with you on the Wake Up Call, Wednesday morning at 9. What you need to know, when you need to know it. The award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz. This is Casey Marshall calling you from Laclede School, room 209. Miss Liz, I love the African necklace. I wore it to Red Lobster. I wish I could go with you to Ghana. Miss Liz, you are the best and one of a kind. Miss Liz, this is Casey Marshall from room 209, where dignity reigns supreme.
Hey, baby.
Have a great summer. Love you.
Love you.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. And Peter, we wanted to wrap up a little bit with the pulling of the contracts last night. One of the things that you wanted to say about what other school districts do when to avoid giving away $300,000 to one person, and the questions that the legitimate questions that are raised about the propriety of that. You could hook all your friends up if all you had to do was take one bid.
That's right, and it's very easy. Anybody who's been in contract knows it's very easy to write your bid requirements so that only one company can meet them.
Right.
And so to avoid even the appearance of that kind of impropriety, a lot of public agencies, public boards require a minimum of three bids for any contract.
For any contract, any and all contracts.
Yes.
All right, I want to get to this issue that I know that nobody knows about. Stadiums?
Yes.
What stadiums? Talk to us about this, Peter.
There's kind of a big foofara, I guess, 8-9 months ago when a group of people, including St. Louis Rams, mm-hmm. approached the St. Louis Public School Board and asked for their support. They presented the idea of a privately financed sports arena for St. Louis Public Schools.
So let me understand this. Free?
Free. Free. They said they looked at, there was work being done by a lot of private companies to upgrade football fields. But they said, we have a lot of sports in the public schools, and it's not just football fields that – not just football teams that need a place to play games and a place to practice. There's really is nothing in the whole district for all the track and field, for mm-hmm. example, or the kids who want to do tennis or different things. So they're going to do a stadium. It would be football, state-of-the-art football, to attract the kind of the state high school football playoffs here in St. Louis, which
free.
Haven't been here in 25 years.
Free.
But other things. Then it would be free. It would be privately financed to build it. It would be put in the name of a not-for-profit company, which would raise the money to maintain it. So there'd be no cost.
Free.
No cost ever
free.
To the schools.
All
it would
right.
be free. And the Rams were...
Or to the citizens.
Or to the citizens.
Or to nobody but this private company.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And it would be available kind of on a priority basis to the schools, but during the times of the years, the evenings when they aren't using it, there'd also be public availability for it, for the citizens of St. Louis.
Free.
And free. And St. Louis Rams were very involved in it. And the board said, wow, this is, at the time, 8-9 months ago, the board said, this is really great, yes. And so they put together the foundation to do this.
And where were they going to build
it? It's called the Community Stadium Project, and they went looking for a place to build it.
Okay.
Considered a variety of sites, and some of them the city said, no, we want to do something else with. So it was a long process of negotiation with the city on where it would end up. They ended up that the city gave them title to the southeast corner of Fairgrounds Park. So it's near Beaumont High School, almost across the street, but a portion of Fairgrounds Park. They gave them, I think it was 30 acres there. To build the stadium and the parking and all that for free,
mm-hmm.
and all this was going to be done. So they got the site, they're raising money, and then very recently, I don't know the exact date, Craig Williams had a meeting with the people.
And bring us to speed up on the meeting, Bill.
About 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'm told that Bob Wallace with the St. Louis Rams, Mike Yarborough with the Rams, met with Dr. Williams to, I guess, bring him up to date on this project.
This free project.
And by the way, it was to be they were going to use the same plans that the new CBC Stadium was built out in West County, and that the St. Louis University High School Stadium is in use. And, of course, Cardinal Ritter has a wonderful stadium as well. But anyway, they had a meeting with the Rams and with the superintendent, and I am told, I wasn't at the meeting, but I am told that the superintendent told the Rams officials that his vision was to do a bond issue. To do a bond issue.
That means that we would have to
have taxpayers pay for it.
To have taxpayers pay for it.
And to build two stadiums. One in North St. Louis and one in South St. Louis.
So he wanted to have equality between North and South St. Louis and have the citizens of St. Louis pay for it. How did the Rams respond?
Well, what I have been told upon hearing that, the Rams have now withdrawn their participation. And they have taken the position that if the school district wants to go in a different direction, then they see no reason for them to invest their resources in a third stadium that they had committed to do. So as it stands now, and maybe they'll reconsider, and maybe the superintendent will reconsider, but that's the position that I was told that the Rams have taken now.
So Craig Williams has botched up a free stadium for the city of for kids in the city of St. Louis.
Yes. The letter we have before us, a letter from the foundations putting it together, basically saying they're withdrawing. You know, they're stopping this project based upon Craig Williams' desire to have
the
taxpayers build two.
Pay for this. And so that gets us to the next place next discussion that we have to have. We have to take a quick break here, but it's fascinating to me that Craig Williams is looking for equality and parity for North and South on a stadium citizen paid for issue. That's not what happened last night with regard to magnet schools.
No, just the opposite.
We're going to take a break, folks. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. I'm talking to Peter Downs, and this is the St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Stay with us.
Calling you from a clean school, second grade room 209. Miss Liz, I'm having a great year. I love you. I love the beautiful message, African message that you gave me. Miss Liz,
the Wake Up Call Global News Update is brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
This is your Wake Up Call Global News Update. Dateline Baghdad. Nearly 2 weeks ago, a 28-year-old freelance reporter for the Christian Science Monitor named Jill Carroll was kidnapped by gunmen in Baghdad. The interpreter she was working with was killed during the abduction. So far, no group has claimed any responsibility. American media outlets have remained surprisingly quiet about this episode. There is now speculation that her abduction may be part of a secret operation with American connections. The same day of the kidnapping, the president of Iraq, Jalal Talabani, stated that political groups might be forming a coalition government within the next 2 months. America would like that to happen because it would likely decrease the political influence of the resistance movement. However, the leading intellectual wing of the insurgency is led by the Association of Muslim Scholars, and they are opposed to such a coalition government. The day after the kidnapping, U.S. troops raided a mosque that was the headquarters of the Muslim Scholars group. The military said they had information the mosque was coordinating abductions, and the raid was conducted to look for the missing reporter. By a strange coincidence, Jill Carroll was supposed to interview the head of the Sunni Accordance Front, Adnan al-Dulami, less than an hour before she was kidnapped. Al-Dulami's group favors a coalition government for Iraq as well. Al-Dulami never showed up for the interview, and Carroll was kidnapped as she left the office where she was to talk to him. Speculation is that she was lured there to be abducted. Jill Carroll wrote an article for the Monitor last April that talked about the kidnapping industry in Iraq. She focused on the discovery of 50 bodies of kidnapped victims that were found in the Tigris River last year. She also wrote an article about Marla Ruzicka, a California woman who was in Iraq to provide humanitarian aid to the people of the country. She was killed by a car bomber who attacked a military convoy last year. Her life and death was the subject of a wake-up call interview last year. This all could explain why there has been little coverage on the kidnapping of this reporter, and it could reinforce the notion that the mainstream media only reports what it is allowed to. This is your wake-up call global news update, brought to you this hour by
Seven Signs Masonry. Whatever your masonry needs, they do all brickwork. These are the best hands in the business. Seven Signs Masonry, 618-338-2871. That's 618-338-2871. Seven Signs Masonry.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues during the 2005-2006 African American History Series. This Saturday, January 21st, Dr. Michael Benjamin will explore how early librarian Daniel Murray sought to preserve African American culture. Reservations are required. Call 314-361-9017. Prior to the program, attendees may purchase breakfast at the Missouri History Museum's award-winning restaurant, Merriweather's. Breakfast is $6 for the general public, $5 for Missouri Historical Society members. The presentation is free to all. Breakfast served at 9 a.m. The presentation begins at 10 a.m. For more information, visit www.mohistory.org.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-376-9913.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. Our former IRS agents and tax professionals have successfully negotiated settlements for thousands of our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
According to IRS statistics, the average settlement for accepted offers and compromise was between 12 and 15 cents per tax dollar owed, which means you could qualify to reduce your tax debt by as much as 85%. If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-376-9913. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-376-9913. That's 800-376-9913.
You want your preschooler to be ready for school. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is ready to help you prepare your preschooler not only for school, but also for life. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center is an outreach of Trinity Tabernacle Assembly of God in Bridgeton. Your child, age 2 to 4, receives a non-denominational Bible curriculum with Bible stories, songs, arts and crafts, plus lessons in numbers, science, arts, and phonics to help prepare him or her for kindergarten. Your child will also grow personally, socially, educationally, and spiritually every day as a unique individual created by God. Call Christine at 314-291-8839 to learn more about Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center and to register your child. Open Monday through Friday from 6:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Trinity Tabernacle Child Development Center, 11950 Mark Twain Drive in Bridgeton, 314-291-8839. Serving the community since 1979.
Real life.
On the cutting edge, it's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Good morning, Miss Liz.
Good morning. Who's this?
This is Dontra Busby calling you from McLean School, Zachy Gray Room 209. Thank you, Miss Liz, for the gift from Africa.
This is the St. Louis City Schools Watch with Peter Downs, a weekly feature of the award-winning Wake Up Call.
Welcome back, welcome back. We got to get to some of these callers. They've been holding on. Let me get to some of these questions here. You have a question for our guest this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. The truth will set you free. Ms. Brown, I can't believe what just came over the air. This superintendent has their audacity talking about he wants a bond issue.
That's right.
Mr. Purdy, please think twice before you renew this man's contract. He does not deserve no more years to get rid of this man, too. But, Mr. Purdy, I want to let you know this. While you're there, you're not going to get anything done because this boy reminds me of the Barnum and Bailey Circus. But you, when we get rid of Darnetta Clinsdale, Mr. Purdy, and Brian Jackson, and Bob Archibald, and put Peter on there, and please don't let Buford on there, you will be to turn that board back around, Mr. Purdy. And like I said, Mr. Purdy, all that outsourcing needs to be stopped. They still waste the money. And I'll never will forget the money that Roberti wasted, Mr. Purdy, Mr.
Right.
Brown. And one more thing, Mr. Brown, if they really want to see how school districts run, he needs to go out there to those other districts like Clayton and Parkway. And this so-called superintendent had their dad to pull the freshman class out of a shot, talking about discipline problems. Oh, no. Think twice about his contract, Mr. Purdy. Thank you.
You're on the Wake Up Call, St. Louis Public Schools Watch. Kevin. Kevin. All right, let's get to the issue of the set-asides. Peter.
Yes, they had a late addition to the agenda last night to discuss a proposal from the administration to set aside 35% of the seats in magnet schools for the neighborhoods in those magnet schools sit in, so kids who could walk to school get a priority for admission to magnet schools. And there's actually quite a lengthy discussion of that. I think that avoided a lot of the issues. Bill Purdy brought up several issues, including that the magnet schools are all on the south side now.
Did Darnetta Clingstall, Darnetta Shamel, did she talk about that?
She didn't have any comments whatsoever on the set-aside.
Now, she's the woman that says that the magnet schools are so important, and she ran on that when she ran for office a few years ago, didn't she?
I think that was part of, magnet schools are popular, and I know in the last couple of elections there have been a lot of questions from parents concerned about cutbacks in magnet schools and say, hey, are you going to keep them? And all the candidates have said, oh, yeah, magnet schools, those are the crown jewels of the school system. We need to keep those. We need to strengthen them.
Flint Fowler, what did he have to say about all the magnet schools being on the north side and doing this set-aside program?
Well, they're all on the south side.
I mean, all on the south side, yes.
He actually asked a good question. He asked whether let me backtrack. Part of the argument for the set-aside is that we aren't filling the magnet schools. We're supposed to have 14,000 seats in magnet schools, and we only have 10,800 kids. Now, they have a waiting list of 4,000, including almost 1,000 white students. But their argument is, well, if we let the kids in these white neighborhoods walk to schools, then they'll go to them, and so we'll fill more seats, and they argue that then more African Americans will get in. And Fowler asked, he says, well, is there could be a lot of kids, even with the neighborhood set aside, the school that a kid wants to go to might not be the one in his neighborhood. So have we looked at all about which schools are popular and which ones aren't? So maybe changing some of the magnet programs, provide more of the popular programs. And Craig Williams said, oh, there's no way to know that information.
At $300,000 a year, he says, and that has always been my concern. This man has never been a superintendent anywhere. He has no expertise, no experience in this. So I guess it shouldn't be surprising that he would say there's no way to find that out, because, Bill, there is a way to find that out, isn't there?
I would think so, surely.
I mean, all you have to do is do a couple surveys to find out who's going to what school, what schools are popular, and what schools have the longest waiting list. And if we have 1,000 white kids on the waiting list, it's not because the schools are not in their neighborhood. It's because Metro School only takes a certain number of kids, right?
Right, right. It's because the programs they want to go to are crowded.
Are crowded.
Are full. And so why not expand those programs and take something, and you have programs then which have, I say, relatively empty, that nobody really wants to go to, or very few people want to go to. Well, why not reduce those and expand the ones that are popular? As you would in any business. You keep saying you want to run it like a business. You know, if you were selling products, you make more of what's selling and make less of what doesn't sell.
And the other piece of it is that if we do this 35% set aside, what it will do is it will have more opportunities for white kids to go to the schools. That's really all that it is, because it's setting aside specific, if they're white neighborhoods with white kids and 35% of the seats set aside, that means that fewer black kids will be able to go to that school. And more white kids will be able to go to that school.
They claim that they won't change the racial mix.
How?
Well, essentially what they're saying is that any white kids who live outside that neighborhood will not be able to go to that school.
But if they've only set aside the seats for those kids in that neighborhood, and the majority of the kids in that neighborhood are white, they still set aside extra white seats.
Well, you can have 40. What they want is 40% of the kids in the school to be white.
And so they're saying that they would never go over 40%.
Right.
And who's going to track that?
I don't know.
Who would track that? We have a white compliance officer that's going to track the number of white kids in the school?
Probably the same people who are tracking compliance with minority participation in contracts.
The airport.
At the airport. Peter, and thank you so much for joining us on the wake-up call this week. And, of course, Bill Purdy, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you, Liz.
And we will be back same time, same place next week with the St. Louis Public Schools Watch and more information, as always. Stay with us, folks.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis, 920 on your AM dial.
Here's the latest from ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. The clock is ticking on an American journalist who was kidnapped in Iraq this month. ABC's Heather Nauert says her militant captors may be ready to kill this woman within days if they don't get what they want. 28-year-old Jill Carroll appeared to be speaking on the tape that aired on Al Jazeera, but the network did not broadcast what she was saying, nor would they divulge the source of the video. According to Al Jazeera, her captors threatened to kill the American journalist unless U.S. troops release Iraqi female prisoners within 72 hours. Carol's family issued a statement saying, "We ask that you please show her mercy and allow her to return home to her family." Carol is a freelance writer on assignment for the Christian Science Monitor. If at first you don't succeed, you try again, and that's what NASA plans to do today to launch its historic mission to Pluto.
If all goes well, it will be the first chance for Earthlings to explore the icy planet by remote control. But there was a hitch during yesterday's originally scheduled liftoff. Less than 3 minutes before the piano-sized vehicle was to leave the launch pad, heavy winds forced a 24-hour postponement.
ABC's Bill Greenwood in Washington. A retired Oregon teacher suffering from terminal breast cancer thinks people in other states would love to have a version of her state's assisted suicide law. That could happen now that the Supreme Court has rebuffed the Bush administration efforts to skirt the law. Well, it's not just a job, it's an adventure, and soon it'll be a better-paying one.
The Army is looking for more than a few good men and women. They'd like to recruit around 10,000 a month between June and September. To do that, they're turning to catchy slogans, national pride, and cash. The top payment to new active duty recruits will double to $40,000. The top reenlistment bonus for active duty soldiers will increase from $60,000 to $90,000. And the top age for recruits is also going up, from 35 to 42. Deirdre Bryant, ABC News.
This is ABC News.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
And here they are all the way from Liverpool.
There are thousands marching on Washington as
a generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477. Ameriprise Financial Services, member NASD and SIPC.
Welcome back to the Sports Beat with me, Dan Stevens, and we've got Nancy on a car phone.
Dan, I just missed a turn. Now should I take a right or a left here?
You know this is Sports Beat, don't you?
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Dan.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
There may be some new changes soon to the way the world's oldest profession operates, at least in one country. Here's ABC's Linda Albin.
The idea is to protect prostitutes by getting them off the streets and to cut down on the number of men caught cruising in their cars. But the government's proposal to allow two or three prostitutes to work together legally in many brothels has led to accusations that the government is condoning sex for sale, something denied by Minister Fiona McTaggart.
I'm opposed to the consequences of making a market in sex.
There are about 80,000 prostitutes in Britain, and many seem unconvinced that the controversial plan will have a positive impact on their lives or their trade. Linda Albin, ABC News, London.
So you say you can't scrape together the down payment for a home. It may not be a problem. The National Association of Realtors says almost half of all home buyers last year put little or no money down. That's good because more ownership, it says, is good for the economy. The bad, those people might be paying more for those homes than they're worth. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
I'm Peyton Colston reporting WGNU News. This report of WGNU News is brought to you by TomTom. Three Illinois state police officers and a Metro East doctor are facing charges of illegally possessing machine guns. Edward McNally, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Illinois, says Dr. Harold Griffiths and Sergeant James Vest are charged for violations that allegedly took place on October 12th. Senior Master Trooper Greg Mugg and Special Agent John Yard are charged for violations that took place on December 29th.
I can't describe their conduct beyond what is alleged in the complaints. All I can tell you is this. Whether you're a public official or whether you're a private citizen, no one is above the law.
McNally says the Illinois State Police cooperated completely with the investigation. If convicted, the defendants face up to 10 years in prison. In other news, a bill extending funding for Missouri's DNA profiling system will go before a state Senate committee this evening. The bill, sponsored by State Senator Matt Bartle of Lee's Summit, would remove the August 28th expiration date for criminal surcharges that fund the profiling system. The program requires the state to keep DNA samples of all felony offenders in Missouri. Supporters of the program say the records have helped to solve almost 150 crimes. And children are needed for a new investigational bird flu vaccine study at St. Louis University. Dr. Robert Belshi, the director of the Center for Vaccine Development at SLU, says researchers need more data on the doses needed to immunize against avian flu. Children must be between the ages of 2 and 9 and must not have been previously vaccinated against the flu this season to be eligible for the study. Compensation will be provided. Call 314-977-6333 for more information. And finally, the University of Missouri will be receiving a $30,000 grant to implement after-school 4-H programs across the state. Don Floyd, the president and CEO of the National 4-H Council, says the 4-H program is not the same as it used to be.
So we have a wide variety of programs that are available, from cutting-edge science and technology and computer programming to entrepreneurial programs to community involvement programs.
There are more than 345,000 Missouri students already involved in 4-H programs. Floyd says this money, which was donated by J.C. Penney, will allow older kids to act as mentors for younger students. That's WGNU News for this hour, brought to you by TomTom. TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you on your way. To learn more, visit TomTom.com. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at 8:09 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with the Southwest Weather. Summer traffic is sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Westbound 270 at Lilac and Graham Hanley. Look for stopping their traffic. Eastbound accident. Eastbound 270 Graham Hanley. Injury reported. Accident and right lanes are blocked. Three of them, as a matter of fact, and traffic jams east of McDonald's. You find another alternate route if you can. Eastbound 40 Timberlake Manor is an accident that's been cleared. Traffic is easing. Northbound 55 between Weber and 44. Nothing there. Eastbound 40 between Spady and Hanley. Look for some heavy traffic in pockets.
Eastbound 70 from Sunbelt all the way to Earth City Expressway looks good. Eastbound 70 from T.R. Hughes to 79 at traffic freezing. Northbound 270 between Grandway and 44 looks for slow traffic. Westbound 40 between McLaughlin and Hanley, you got slow traffic. Eastbound 44 between Lewis and 270, everything's on the move. Westbound 5570 from 64 to the PSB, look for slow traffic. Westbound 64 at 5570, look for slow traffic there as well. Westbound Kingbridge traffic from Laclede's Landing, look for normal traffic. North 20th at Washington, there's an injury accident there. Eastbound Page at 270, there's an accident reported. And that is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for the rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery. Have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. Now, taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny, breezy, turning warmer, high around 50 this evening. Partly cloudy, low around 35. Thursday, variably cloudy, showers possible, warmer with a high around 60 Thursday evening. Look for skies becoming mostly cloudy, a chance of showers with a low around 40. And on Friday, chance of showers cooler with a high wind around 50. Currently, the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 27 degrees, Lambert Fields reporting 29 under clear skies. More with Liz Brown is up next, the award-winning wake-up call. We'll take another look at your traffic and weather in the bottom of the 8 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. We have much to talk about. 454-0400. 1-877-920-WGNU. That's 1-877-920-WGNU. Don't forget, we are archived daily. The wake-up call is archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. So if you missed an hour, you can go get an hour. Check out my website at lizbrown.com, lizbrown.com. Check out the website. And if you want to find out a little bit more information, a lot more information, information about the interviews, the discussions, the stories that we cover here on the Wake Up Call, check out lizbrown.com. Also, check out my Liz Picks for the year 2005. And don't forget, in the next hour, we will have Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Peter Arnett on the show. We're going to be talking about Iraq and the media coverage in Iraq and how wrong it has gone. Whew, I think we're going to need a lot more time than an hour for Pulitzer Prize winning reporter Peter Arnett. He got fired from CNN, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Shows he was doing something right. My name is Liz Brown. This is The Wake Up Call. We have much to talk about this hour. We're going to take a little bit of a time this morning. We're going to take a bit of your time this morning to talk about a children's book, a book entitled Corn Silk and Black Braids. It's a story of a little girl who is having some a bad hair day, and how she deals with, and her family deals with, a story about self-esteem. We have the author, Dr. Vincent Johnson, joining us from Chicago, author of Corn Silk and Black Braids. Dr. Johnson, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you.
Very good. You are the author of A Corn Silk and Black Braids. Where did the story come from?
Well, it was inspired by an experience that my mother had back in the South. My mom lived in Ripley, Tennessee, and she told me about an incident when she was about 8, 9 years old when she would play with a little white girl that was across the highway. And she would admire the little girl's blonde hair. And as the racial tensions kind of got a little bit heated where she lived, they were not allowed to play with one another. And so my mother would go into the cornfields and play with the corn, so that, and it reminded her of her friend. I took this story in a little bit different direction because my mother was a cosmetologist, and I would see women getting their hair done all the time, and sometimes they were getting it fried, dyed, and laid to the side, if you will. And I wanted to talk about this topic because it was so powerful, seeing how hair and self-esteem was so powerful that time, but it really came from my influenced by my mom's experience, at least.
And you do children's books. This isn't the first children's book that you have done.
No, the first one I did was called Malik and the Magnificent Glowing Light. I published that back in 1997, and that is about a father-son relationship and how they build a science project together, really a flashlight. And that draws upon a relationship that I had with my own father. And it's really more so about connecting father and son together because my father was so busy, spent so much time working, had a few jobs, actually, and to be able to just kind of say, well, even though you have a man that is very busy, you can still spend time with your family and be nurturing in that process.
And these are books that are for children of African descent?
Well, you know, definitely has us in mind, definitely. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely, I want all the books so far to have children of color involved with it because all these stories are coming from experiences that I've had. And so that, to me, it makes it a lot richer and a lot more real in that sense. And I'm not seeing as many books out there with our images in them. I was at the Harlem Book Fair last year, and I was on a panel with Walter Mosley speaking about the topic of where are the books that look like us. And definitely we're seeing more and more of them out there, but I think that there's definitely nothing wrong with seeing a person of color in a book and being able to say, wait a minute, I can relate to that because I'm a person of color. I can see a child of color. And But I'm presenting these stories in a way that pretty much anybody can kind of say, oh, yeah, I can experience problems with my hair. I can have a relationship with my father. I can be in a family relationship and connect that way, too.
And who is your illustrator?
Well, for the current book, a person named Linda Crockett, she is an illustrator out of Euclid, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
How did you come to choose her?
I actually had chosen her through a website called guru.com,
mm-hmm.
G-U-R-U.com. And I was able to actually put an advertisement out there. And a lot of people would put their portfolios up. And I was trying to get a sense where I wanted to capture a sense of realism. And realism can be everything from stylized to surrealistic almost. And so when I saw her portfolio, I thought that she would be a person that could really capture what I wanted. And in many cases, when you have, say, author and illustrator, they never meet one another and they never have really input and hear what the other person has to say. But in this situation, I think that she listened well, and I was able to listen to what she had to contribute. And I think it ended up being a good project.
I've read some stories about you or interviews with you, and one of the things that you talked about was the process of writing a children's book. Walk us through that process, because it's different than writing a novel for adults, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. I think that many people think that it's a lot easier to write for children, and it's a very difficult process in many ways. I mean, just when it came to, of course, to come Black Berries, for instance, I actually developed this story back in 1992, and it was really developed initially for the Gertrude William Johnson Ebony Writing Contest. And at that time, my mother had told me a lot about stories that were happening to her. So I had submitted that story to them. It didn't win that contest, but I was so inspired by my mom's story that I wanted to make this into a children's picture book. And I had gone to a small press that was in Pennsylvania, and at that time I was told something that was rather surprising. The guy said, well, your story is too good for us. We're too small of a press. We think you should go to New York. And so when I had thought about that, I said, okay, I'll definitely look into the larger presses. And then he wrote me a letter saying, well, oh, I failed to explain myself. I can actually publish your book. So at that point I said, well, I have to actually learn a lot more about publishing. And about writing for children. One thing that I do just in this process is try to hold focus groups, try to sit down with children and find out what they're interested in. Definitely being a pediatrician, I'm able to kind of connect with children developmentally. And coming up with a story, at some level, I want something that I like, something that I can actually relate to and maybe have experienced when I was a child. But the other level is then finding out something that children will enjoy as well. So one aspect of that process is having the writing a draft of it. I like to kind of sit down and read the story to children, have a little focus group, if you will. Another aspect of it is getting the illustrator involved with it. You have to think about the issue of what your timeline is. When you're trying to market a book, when you're trying to actually get the information out there, when you're trying to then at the basic level, kind of bring together the illustrations with the writing itself, because when you're looking at a picture book, so much of that story has to be brought out through the pictures as well. And you don't want just a literal portrayal of what's happening in the text and the pictures. You want the pictures to kind of bring out some other aspect. As one artist said, that the writing is the seeds and I am the sunshine. So you want to bring something else that is so much different to kind of bring life to that work. And I think that is one of the more difficult aspects of writing that, because you don't want to give away too much, but you want to leave enough that can be brought out through the aspect of the illustrations as well.
And I guess you're trying to also speak to both children and adults, because the children are not buying the book.
Right.
The grown-ups are buying the book. So the grown-ups have to see a message in it, too, or have to have a feel from it as well.
Definitely.
So what are the ages that you are trying to connect with Corn Silk and Black Braids?
In this book right here, from the ages of 6 to 9 years of age, because this topic is one that which I wanted to kind of spark a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This actually is a book that could even be enjoyed by adults too, but because I wanted it to actually spark a conversation, I thought that the 6 to 9 age group would be the best situation in that sense. And that's also an age at which a lot of young girls are struggling with issues with their hair. I have three sisters that are teachers, and they witness this all the time when young girls are coming into the classroom initially, and they're young, and they're, say, in first, second, third grade. And some of them are getting weaves, some of them are getting their hair relaxed, and some of them are actually having situations where their hair falls out. So I wanted to kind of give them an option. At least when you look at the book, Sarah, the main character, gets a natural hairstyle, if you will. She doesn't have to have it necessarily pressed or relaxed. But I wanted to kind of show them that, wait a minute, there are a lot of different aspects of that which can be done naturally. You know, you can definitely have a lot of variety with your hair, but I think in that sense it makes it more powerful.
When you did your focus groups with the little ones, what were some of the comments that came out of those focus groups?
Well, what they usually say is that I have an uncle or I have an aunt that experiences that. A lot of them kind of connect with their own family experiences. Some of them say, "Well, my hair hurts when my mother combs it," or they might say, "Well, you might admit, well, my mother doesn't do my hair very well," or "My mother has problems with my hair," but then my friend or my aunt comes in and they can kind of work together on that. So what I find that from them, they can see a little bit of a problem-solving process, that sometimes things take a little bit of time to kind of be resolved. And it's really interesting to kind of see how bright they are at some level, maybe because sometimes I think the kids aren't given enough credit in that sense.
Well, did any of the children in any of your focus groups give you some ideas that you incorporated into your book?
You know, one aspect was having Sarah meet back up with Mary Beth. In the story, Mary Beth basically is by a store, and then as Sarah and her mother are walking to the store, Sarah meets Mary Beth, and that's when she first experiences this blonde hair. And so the focus group was very important as far as kind of bringing about some subsequent development in the story, having Mary Beth then meet back with Sarah, and then Sarah realizing, well, now I've gone from hair that my mother, the style that my mother didn't do very well, now I've got cornrows that my Aunt Lubell has made for me. And at that level, Sarah's kind of almost flossing, like, look at my hair, look at how beautiful it is, look how great it is. And then she realizes that the hair that she likes so much, this other girl's hair, the blonde hair, she has problems with her hair too. And so I think that was very powerful because children can also realize that, hey, you know, sometimes something that I admire or that I think is so perfect, it doesn't come without problems as well. It takes work and it sometimes takes struggle.
And where can people get a copy of your book?
They can get it at Barnes & Noble, barnesandnoble.com. They can get it from amazon.com. They can order it actually from any bookstore. It's available to libraries, everyone. So basically you can go on my website, which is marzettabooks.com, and access it. But you can also get it from, again, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, in any bookstore, really.
And who's Marzetta Books?
Marzetta Books is a company that I created. And Marzetta is my middle sister's middle name. And when I was thinking about having some kind of a label in connection with the book, I wanted a name that was not very common. And when I thought about the process of my sisters going through their hair getting done, my mother doing their hair when they were little, I thought about my middle sister and I said, wait a minute, Marzetta would be perfect for this.
And I want to thank you very much, Dr. Vincent Johnson, author of Corn Silk and Black Braids. Thank you so much for joining us on The Wake Up Call.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
All right.
Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. We have so much stuff to talk about. In our next hour, we're going to be joined by Peter Arnett, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Take no prisoners. Let me put it this way. I like his attitude. I truly do. I like his attitude. So we're going to have him joining us in the next hour to talk about the media coverage of Iran, the media coverage of Iraq, the media coverage of Afghanistan, and the media's role in reporting on war. What is a report? Well, how is a reporter supposed to report on the war? And also we're going to be probing into the question of is what this administration is doing in pursuing this war and attempting to get the media to respond in a certain way. Is that something that has ever been done before? We're going to be talking about that as well. So that's the next hour. Peter Arnett will be joining us on the wake-up call. My number here is 454-0400. My email address is revolution@lizbrown.com. You can check us out at lizbrown.com. You can also check out the archives at whiterosesociety.org. That's whiterosesociety.org. You need to get up. You need to get to me. I don't know, y'all. I say this in passing. But I'm looking out this window, January 18th? January 18th in St. Louis, Missouri, and it's supposed to be 60 degrees tomorrow, and we had snow flurries yesterday. Please don't try to tell me that there is not something whack going on with our weather. And I just want to share with you the extreme weather that's happening in Japan. Asia is reeling under the harshest weather in years. China's temperatures have plummeted. 100,000 people had to be evacuated when homes collapsed under snow. 250,000 people have been snowed in China. Japan, heaviest ever blizzards, drifts up to 10 feet deep. Authorities have been struggling to cope with the unprecedented snow. They've had to call out the army to clear the roofs and the roads. Did anybody see the movie The Day After Tomorrow? Anybody see that movie? The Day After Tomorrow. Or the movie opens up with this freak hailstorm in Japan. And freak weather conditions that a snowstorm in Japan. While it hasn't gotten that bad yet, you need to be very concerned. There was frost in India for the first time in decades. Children ran into the streets in excitement in New Delhi. Are you feeling me? Are you feeling me? 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. You need to get up. You need to get to me. You need to be scared. You need to be very, very, very scared. I'm Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. We're going to take a break, but we'll be back at your comments. Stay with me.
Waiting to bloom. Like a light bulb in a dark room, I'm just sitting here waiting for you to come on home and turn me on.
Good morning, St. Louis. 32 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock at AM 920 WGN, you are Howard Porter. Solid traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by Illinois Lottery. Eastbound 270, Graham Hanley injury accident. Two right lanes are blocked. Traffic jams through Lindbergh. Northbound 55 from River Prepare to Lafayette. Expect normal traffic. Eastbound 70 from K to Blanchett Bridge looks good. Westbound 270 from New Halls Ferry to Graham Hanley. Look for vehicles slowing. Take a look at the accident. Northbound 270 at 44. Everything's returned back to normal. Westbound 40 between the Plaza and Hanley. Look for slow traffic. Eastbound 40 at Timberlake Manor. Look for slow traffic due to an earlier accident. It's on the shoulder now. Eastbound 40 at 40. Slows from Spady all the way to Lindbergh and then from McKnight to Hanley. The I-70 reversible lanes are closed until midday for maintenance work. Westbound 5570 at the Poplar Street Bridge. Look for slow traffic. Westbound Kingbridge traffic at Laclede's Landing looks good. And Gravois at 270. Look for an accident on the left shoulder. No delays. That is a look at this hour's traffic, and this hour's traffic has been sponsored by the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for the rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery. Have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and for Friday. Partly sunny, breezy, turning warmer, high around 50 today. This evening, partly cloudy with a low around 35. Thursday, variably cloudy, showers possible, high around 60. Thursday evening, skies turning mostly cloudy, chance of showers with a low around 40. And then on Friday, chance of showers cooler with a high around 55. Currently at studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 28 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 30. Both under sunny skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning Wake Up Call. That's up next. Take another look at your news, traffic, and weather in 9 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues during the 2005-2006 African American History Series. This Saturday, January 21st, Dr. Michael Benjamin will explore how early librarian Daniel Murray sought to preserve African American culture. Reservations are required. Call 314-361-9017. Prior to the program, attendees may purchase breakfast at the Missouri History Museum's award-winning restaurant, Meriwether's. Breakfast is $6 for the general public, $5 for Missouri Historical Society members. The presentation is free to all. Breakfast served at 9 a.m. The presentation begins at 10 a.m. For more information, visit www.mohistory.org.
This is Mitch Washington of the St. Louis office of Edward Jones, located at 200 North Broadway downtown, inviting you to tune in to Radio Free St. Louis for the WGNU Stock Market Recap, weekday afternoons immediately following the 3:30 traffic update. Find out how your investments are doing and how the numbers on Wall Street are affecting you. That's the WGNU Stock Market Recap with me, Mitch Washington, weekday afternoons at 3:30 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, Black-owned and Black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union, Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
Pulitzer Prize-winning news correspondent Peter Arnett will be our special guest on the Wake Up Call Wednesday morning at 9. He's been around the world and has a broad perspective to draw upon. From the 13 years he covered the Vietnam conflict to the 18 he spent with CNN. He was the first Western reporter to interview Osama bin Laden back in 1997. Peter Arnett has some interesting thoughts about our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he'll share them with you on the Wake Up Call, Wednesday morning at 9. Real life, on the cutting edge. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Walking around like I'm made out of diamond. I tripped and fell and it reminded me to move over and let my angels guide me. Ooh, you're going too fast. Got your hands in the air with your feet on the gas. About to wreck your future, running from the past. You need to slow down.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown, living my life as an African and loving it. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the Wake Up Call. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the Wake Up Call.
Good morning, Ms. Brown.
Good morning.
You know, I'm concerned that the manipulation of the possible manipulation of the satellites to disrupt the rhythms of the elements. You know, like
turn your radio
like
down.
Stir up the waters and to make tsunamis and flooding. You know, I don't.
turn your radio down, please?
Yes.
You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm outstanding.
Excellent. By the way, I must applaud you on your series on the Walmart story.
Yes, sir.
There's another radio station here in town that they were doing a program on it yesterday, and they thought they stumbled onto something big.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, you snooze, you lose, because WGNU's got you, you know, already into the dust.
Been there, done that.
Indeed, but there's a guest that you might have on. Not trying to tell you how to run the program. His name's Mike Corcoran. He's a state rep out of St. Anne's, and he's proposing legislation for companies such as Walmart that 15% of payroll would go to insurance for employees.
For health insurance for,
yes.
For employees? I suspect that that is a result of the stories that we have done in the past about how other states are doing that same type of a thing. In fact, I forgot now, it's slipped my mind, as a state that just now passed legislation requiring that.
I was thinking it was like Virginia or Maryland, something like that.
I don't recall. It slipped my mind.
And another guest that you might have is Doug Yeager from Laclede Gas. You know, in light of what has happened with the high cost of our utility bills.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just thought I'd throw those suggestions to you.
All right, Barry.
Thank you for your time. You have a great week.
Take care. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding.
Oh, I had called you a couple of weeks ago about the weather, how the strange weather we're having.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that we're killing Earth.
It's craziness.
I wish, you know, silly to wish, but I just think how it might have been if the Indians had this land over here, and it wouldn't have been all this air pollution and, you know, killing the fish in the water. It's not safe to eat the fish anymore. You're scared to eat the birds because, you know, chicken. I mean, it's just how we treat the earth is how the earth treats us.
Mm.
I remember when I was young, Liz, I would go outside and play all day in the sun. You know, I was a kid. I used to be dark, real dark. But now, I can't do it. The sun don't feel like it used to feel.
Really?
I think, am I getting old or is you know?
Mm. Okay. It's 60 degrees tomorrow. We had snow flurries yesterday in January.
Yeah.
In January. It's craziness.
It's crazy. We need to watch what we're doing to the earth
and
the air
absolutely.
And the water. Yeah.
Absolutely. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Liz.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. One of the things that's happening in these extreme weathers that we're having is some places are getting weather that we wouldn't necessarily consider all that cold, 32 degrees or 45 degrees. In India, the reason why it's so significant that you get a 32-degree temperature is because they have tens of thousands of homeless people, if not hundreds of thousands of homeless people. And they have, and they're poor. They don't have access to hospitals. Hospitals won't take them. They go to a hospital. They get sick. They don't take them. Now they can take the heat of India, but they're ill suited for dealing with colder weather. They have taken to the homeless in India, have taken to taking their clothes off and burning some of their clothes in order to stay warm. And people have been dying. All across Asia, 70 people in Japan, 47 people in Pakistan, India, they can't count they're embarrassed. A lot of it has to do with they'd have to admit to the number of homeless that they have despite this huge economic boom that is taking place in India. They don't, and they can't deal with this weather because they don't possess a blanket. They don't possess warm clothes. And I ask you, isn't it interesting that the editing, it feels like editing. I can't prove it yet, but it feels like the editing that is going on. It's like American media doesn't want, because they feel like, oh, we have Katrina exhaustion. We've done our time with extreme weathers, that we don't need to hear about what's going on in other parts of the country. Or maybe it's just that news media has changed and it no longer covers what's going on in the other parts of the world anyway. But we're not hearing the stories of people being buried alive under snow in China or Japan. And it feels calculated. The fact that we have not and are not hearing about this. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Frank.
Yeah, Liz, when Peter Arnett comes on, I want you to make sure you add to his bio, you know, the fact that March 2003, fired by NBC, MSNBC. Same month he was fired by National Geographic. Yes. Senator Bunning from the Senate, U.S. Senate, suggested he be tried for treason.
Absolutely.
When he was on Iraqi TV, state-owned TV.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about all of that.
National Review called him Saddam's secret weapon.
Isn't that something?
I can understand why you'd have him on.
I can understand why I would, too, because he's gotten fired from the best places in the world to get fired from. And the best people in the world to want to attack you are attacking him. So you're doggone Skippy. I would have him on my show.
Yeah, Liz,
absolutely.
If you could get the devil on, you'd do it.
Well, is your dad busy?
You know what I'm
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. I think that if we can get George on, we can. You know, 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. I can't wait to the next hour to have Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Peter Arnett, who's gotten fired from MSNBC, who made CNN. Nobody would know who CNN was if it wasn't for the reporting of Peter Arnett. 3,000 stories he did from Vietnam. He was the only reporter reporting from both Gulf War I and Gulf War II. And I thought everything in America was about, we should be able to go on anybody's news station and say what we need to say, shouldn't we? Isn't that what democracy is all about? 454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. Get up. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Mike.
How you doing?
Where are you speaking from? You have on a speakerphone or something?
Yeah, I'm calling from North Carolina. Look, Liz, I just wanted to say one thing about Virginia just passed the tsunami warning system program. In Virginia, I think it was about a week ago, and there's a lot of drilling for natural gas out on the coastlines in the United States that they're not talking about either. So when I associate the tsunami situation with some type of tampering with the Earth's core, you know?
Okay.
Think about it.
Okay. Thanks, Mike.
Bless you.
454-0400 is my phone number. Gene.
Liz Brown.
Yes, ma'am.
What a beautiful answer you told that guy.
I just asked.
Liz.
Yes, ma'am.
You're going to have white people really mad at you. Liz, who would have thought of that? It just came off the top of your head.
It did. It did. It did.
You are so bright. Liz, everybody's listening to you. I think more whites listen to you. You teach, girl.
All
you
right.
really do.
All right.
I just love that answer. It just came out.
Yes, ma'am, it did.
It did, all because right. you're so bright.
Thank you, sir.
And everybody knows that, too.
All right.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care. We're going to take a break, folks. I'm Liz Brown. Wake up call in our next hour. Peter Arnett, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, fired from every news media that I know of. Two thumbs up. We're going to be talking to him. I'll be back. Stay with me.
Ain't nothing in the whole wide world like the peace that I have found. The little things and the joy they bring.
This global news report is brought to you by attorney Albert Walton, helping people get paid for over 25 years.
This is your wake-up call, global news update. Dateline Washington. This report focuses on a company that defrauded taxpayers out of millions of dollars as part of the Iraqi reconstruction effort. The name of the company even sounds crazy, Custer Battles. But it is taken from the names of the founders, former Army officers Scott Custer and Michael Battles. After the mission accomplished declaration by the president in 2003, this company got a $16 million contract to provide security at Baghdad International Airport. But it had no experience in security. The only thing it had was Custer with connections inside the White House. A month later, the company got a second contract from the Coalition Provisional Authority to oversee a currency exchange that traded Saddam Hussein dinars to newly designed bills that did not have his picture on them. The government paid for all the costs to set up distribution centers and then gave the company a 25% markup for overhead and profit. Later, an audit of the company in 2003 found that it overcharged the CPA by some $7 million, which came out to be a markup of 162%, not the 25% agreed to. But this company was left on as a contractor for another year until an Air Force investigation revealed massive fraud. As far as the Air Force security job, it turned out to be nothing but a bunch of phony companies in Lebanon and the Cayman Islands that sent paperwork saying that they had provided trucks, forklifts, and other equipment, which, of course, never happened. This is your wake-up call global news update.
When you've been hurt in an accident, there are many things to consider. Doctor's bills, time lost from work, medical costs, ongoing injuries, pain and suffering. For over 25 years, attorney Albert Walton has helped people get paid for their property, paid for their pain and suffering, paid for their loss. Before you talk to anyone, call 314-388-3400. That's 388-3400 and talk to attorney Albert Walton for free. If you've been hurt, let attorney Albert Walton's knowledge and experience help you get paid. 314-388-3400.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues during the 2005-2006 African American History Series. This Saturday, January 21st, Dr. Michael Benjamin will explore how early librarian Daniel Murray sought to preserve African American culture. Reservations are required. Call 314-361-9017. Prior to the program, attendees may purchase breakfast at the Missouri History Museum's award-winning restaurant, Merriweather's. Breakfast is $6 for the general public, $5 for Missouri Historical Society members. The presentation is free to all. Breakfast served at 9 a.m. The presentation begins at 10 a.m. For more information, visit www.mohistory.org.
I'm Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me from 2 to 4 every Monday through Friday afternoon on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. And stay tuned for today's solutions with David Lenihan from 4 to 6.
Use your exercise bike for more than just a clothes rack. Find out how by attending the Sinclair Life Fitness Fair, 10 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, January 20th and 21st, and from noon to 6, Sunday, January 22nd, at Sinclair Square in Fairview Heights. More than just another health fair, it's a showcase for retailers, service groups, healthcare professionals, and fitness pros, all ready to help you get in shape and improve your life. Night Magic Entertainment brings you music all weekend long. WGNU will be broadcasting from the fair on Friday. See a variety of singers, dances, and aerobic demonstrations. Enjoy a healthy snack. Stop by Center Court to register for one of dozens of great prizes. Come on, you can do it. Get moving to the St. Clair Life Fitness Fair. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, January 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Hosted by St. Clair Square in Fairview Heights. Sponsored in part by Night Magic Entertainment and Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. GNU. Get more details at sbcshows.com. This is a Specialized Promotional Concepts production.
Pulitzer Prize-winning news correspondent Peter Arnett will be our special guest on the wake-up call Wednesday morning at 9. He's been around the world and has a broad perspective to draw upon. from the 13 years he covered the Vietnam conflict to the 18 he spent with CNN. He was the first Western reporter to interview Osama bin Laden back in 1997. Peter Arnett has some interesting thoughts about our involvement in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he'll share them with you on the Wake Up Call, Wednesday morning at 9. Starting your day with information you can't get anywhere else. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Shadows are falling all over town. Another night in this blue coming down. Oh, misery, I sure could use some company.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call, Liz Brown. You need to get up, you need to get to me. Car phone.
Liz Brown.
Who on the car phone?
You know, it's not hard to pick out the 52% who voted for George Bush, you know, like the individual that was talking about Peter Arnett. I'm glad you're bringing him on. I'm hoping he can bring some of the, these issues out. I caught Frontline last night. I don't know if you watched it.
What time does Frontline come on?
It came on at 9.
No, I did not.
Okay, well, if you get a chance to see it, they talked about the contractors over in Iraq and all of these people that didn't think George Bush was going to war before he went to war.
Mm-hmm.
Kellogg Brown and Root was in country, in Kuwait, 6 months before they invaded, putting all of the stuff together for the soldiers when they got there.
Mm.
We're saying that even though Kellogg Brown and Root wouldn't say it, one of the colonels over there that they finally asked, and we don't know whether he's telling the truth or not, but he says it's costing us $20 a meal to feed our soldiers. And they're serving, this one place they talked about, they're serving something like 105,000 meals a day.
Jesus.
You know, these people over here, they talked about the contractors and they talked about the fact that the soldiers over there are upset about having these contractors over there, like Blackwater Security, who's getting paid $1,000 a day when they're barely making around it.
Oh, I know. I've talked about that on the show. We've had people on the show to talk about that.
You know, and they're steady dumping all of this money into Iraq and into Kuwait, all these countries are giving it to these contractors, and then Americans are sitting back here saying, everything's fine. Or they're not saying anything, and George Bush, them are paying their friends left and right, and our soldiers are dying.
Got to roll. Thanks for your call.
All right, Liz.
454-0400 is my phone number. Car phone.
Yeah, good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
I was wondering, you know, you mentioned India and stuff. I was wondering how much American interest is involved in those countries and why you don't hear about the media putting stuff like that on TV, because if they did, I think you find out that America has a lot of companies and stuff like that over there in these countries, and the American way of doing things, like if you don't have any insurance or healthcare insurance, you don't get in the hospital.
Well, they have
really
a caste
care about you.
Well, they have a caste system in India that also plays into whether or not you get hospital care or not. If you are considered unclean, you ain't coming into the hospital, and that's based on their caste system. But thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. Frederick. Good morning. Frederick.
Hello?
Yes, Frederick.
Yes. It's Liz Brown?
Yes.
Okay, I wanted to talk to you in regards to the weather. That it's an inventor here in St. Louis named Dr. Robert McGee that invented the flat irons. He's designed a game called The Truth About the Matrix We Live in which he talks about a lot of different things in our society that believe to be true that are really not true. And one of the topics he talks about is called the Heart Project. It's a project in which they use to control the weather, magnetic forces to control the weather. Now, he's a gentleman that I think you really should have on your show.
Well, actually, as a matter of fact, I am going to have him on the show because he's having an event over at the History Museum. I believe it's February 3rd that he's going to be having an event where he talks about that game and he talks about being an inventor and the things that we need to have to be aware of. So I'm glad you brought that up. I'm absolutely going to have him on the show.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
454-0400 is my phone number. 454-6609 is my fax. And that's a fabulous game, too. You won't want to miss that show, and you won't want to miss that event that's going to that he's bringing to town. My name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Stay with me.
Good morning, Liz.
Good morning.
You know, the Pentagon for a long time have been trying to devise ways of controlling the weather. And just imagine if you can control the weather, and whereas it's cold in areas of the world where it's normally warm, it could spur an increase of oil usage, things that's not produced there,
well,
like
now,
furnaces
yeah.
And such, and go on and on and on.
Well, now you could sell blankets to India.
Yes, you could.
Sell blankets to India.
And it would be nice if you could get the devil on your program. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, 454-0400. I'd be the only one in town, wouldn't I? 454. Because I sure have some questions for him. 454-0400 is my phone number. Get to me. You're on the wake-up call. Good morning.
How you doing, Liz?
I'm outstanding.
You know what? Yesterday, I spoke to you about Ray Nagin, about his statement.
I know. And I went back and I reread the entire statement, and I've come to a different conclusion.
It is horrible, isn't it?
It is a horrible statement.
And I end up defending these idiots and get slapped in the face. My daughter told me. That's horrible.
And
that's
again,
why I called you.
Okay, and I only heard that part of it, and I went back and I read the statements in their entirety, and
he capitulates.
He's crazy. I think that he's gone mad. I think he's out of his mind.
Okay,
I really
bye-bye.
Do. Thanks for your call. Listen, folks. Next hour, Peter Arnett, Pulitzer Prize winning correspondent, lifetime covering war. International crisis for American news organizations. He was there in Gulf War I, Gulf War II, thousands and thousands and thousands of stories coming out of Vietnam. He wrote, got fired from every news industry agency company in America. And there's a reason why. I think that happens when you tell the truth and leave no prisoners. I'm Liz Brown. Stay with us for the next hour. Don't want to miss it.
WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis. 920 on your AM dial.
From ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. It could be a major issue in the November midterm elections. Now both political parties are rushing to come up with new policies about what's okay when it comes to lawmakers and lobbyists and what's not. The Democrats will unveil theirs today. Illinois Senator Barack Obama says his party's really doing it as a precautionary measure.
It is important, though, for Democrats not to get on their high horse, but rather recognize that some of the culture of corruption that has been taking place in Washington is something that is going to require bipartisan work in order to clean up.
A Republican plan is in the works, too. How safe is your kid when he's behind the wheel? The AAA says what you should be asking is, how safe is everyone around him?
The DVD is aimed specifically at teaching teenagers to drive more safely.
Pavement edge drop-offs like this one require you to keep your cool.
The program presents realistic-looking driving situations, asking players to make a safe choice, telling them if they are right.
Good choice.
Or wrong.
Bad choice.
The AAA says the computer program is a safe way to learn safe driving.
If you crash, no biggie. It's just your computer, not your dad's $450,000 Lamborghini Countach.
The program is called Drivers Zed, Z-E-D, Zero Errors Driving. Jim Hickey, ABC News.
Iraqi militants who kidnapped an American journalist have given her 72 hours to live. The Arab language TV channel Al Jazeera ran a silent videotape of Jill Carroll. Washington Post reporter Jackie Spinner, who was also nearly kidnapped in Iraq, says it doesn't look good.
Their demands for female Iraqi detainees show that they think they have something. Unfortunately, the U.S. government's posture has always been that they're not going to bargain, and all of us who are there know that and understand that.
Carol is a freelance writer who was on assignment for the Christian Science Monitor. The consumer price index dropped 0.1% in December, the second straight decline overall, though inflation was up last year due mainly to skyrocketing oil prices. This is ABC News.
You're now seeing live pictures of a lunar module.
And here they are all the way from Liverpool.
There are thousands more.
watching on Washington as
a generation as unique as this needs a new generation of personal financial planning. We are the personal advisors of Ameriprise Financial, formerly American Express Financial Advisors. To set up an appointment with a local financial advisor today, call 1-800-AMERIPRISE. That's 1-800-263-7477. Ameriprise Financial Services, member NASD and SIPC.
Welcome back to Sports Beat with me, Dan Stevens, and we've got Nancy on a car phone.
Dan, I just missed a turn. Now should I take a right or a left here?
You know this is Sports Beat, don't you?
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Dan.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
Putting the mass in mass transit, ABC's Gil Gross tells us that more of us are hopping the bus or taking the train these days.
It took $3 a gallon gasoline to get noticed, but it seems America discovered mass transit this past year. Figures released by the American Public Transportation Association shows ridership way up in Dallas, Houston, Kansas City, Salt Lake City. Here in transit-phobic Los Angeles, ridership was up 9% over the summer, and a bus line that uses a paved-over rail right-of-way instead of highways was an instant success with riders, as Angelinos found that you can read on your way to work. Well, do it safely anyway. Gil Gross, ABC News, Los Angeles.
It turns out you can marry for money after all. Researchers at Ohio State University say people who marry and who stay together tend to accumulate two times the financial assets that those who stay single do. As for divorce, that'll break you. The study shows most people lose about three quarters of their assets if they split. I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
Here's another update of WGNU News. This report brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. I'm Peyton Colston reporting. In the news this morning, St. Louis Police Chief Joe Mokwa is concerned about the violent start to 2006 in the city. In 2005, the murder rate in St. Louis climbed by about 15%, partly due to a high number of killings in two police districts on the city's north side. And the trend appears to be continuing in 2006. Chief Mokwa says the police department is trying several new approaches to combat the violence.
Identifying the most vulnerable places, the most vulnerable people, putting cameras in certain locations. Every month the commanders come in and take a look at what's going on in those neighborhoods. And the three new things that we're trying to do is to get a group of high-level, interested people in North St. Louis to take a look at what we can do about it and really try and look at some of the preventative things that I can do.
Mokwa says he has directed the department's gang unit to identify all children under the age of 16 in their gang files and talk with their parents. Chief says he also wants to contact the parents of children who are not attending school regularly. The search continues for a suspect in a bank robbery in South St. Louis. Police say the U.S. Bank in the 5400 block of Hampton was held up around 2:45 yesterday afternoon. The suspect is described as a black male, 6 feet tall, about 200 pounds, last seen wearing a black nylon jacket and a black baseball cap. Anyone with information is asked to call the FBI at 314-231-4324 or St. Louis Police at 314-444-5555. The University of Missouri will be receiving a $30,000 grant to implement after-school 4-H programs across the state. Don Floyd, the president and CEO of the National 4-H Council, says the 4-H program is not the same as it used to be. He says the programs include everything from computer programming to community involvement. Floyd says after-school programs are important to help keep kids safe and out of trouble. Floyd cites the fact that juvenile crime rises between the hours of 3 and 6 in the afternoon. And finally, St. Louis University is looking for children to participate in a bird flu vaccine study. Dr. Robert Belchi, the director of the Center for Vaccine Development at SLU, says this is the same vaccine that's been tested in adults at clinical sites across the country.
We know how to make good vaccines for flu, including vaccines to prevent bird flu or avian influenza. However, we don't know the dose of vaccine that we have to give. And children are particularly important in the spread of influenza. Children are the vectors that spread a flu around our society, primarily by acquiring acquiring it at school from other children, and then they bring it home.
Children must be between the ages of 2 and 9 and must not have been previously vaccinated against the flu this season to be eligible for the study. Compensation will be provided. Call 314-977-6333 for more information. That's WGNU News, brought to you by the Illinois Lottery. Play daily, play nightly, play when you need a smile, play for the rush. No matter how you play, play the Illinois Lottery. Have a ball, have fun, play responsibly. I'm Peyton Colston with WGNU News.
Good morning, St. Louis. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock at AM 920 WGNU. I'm Howard Morton with a look at this hour's traffic and weather. This hour's traffic is sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Eastbound 70 at 270, there's an accident. Left lane is blocked with a short backup. Westbound 44, poles look for a disabled tractor trailer, and the right lane is blocked. Northbound 55 at Germania and 44, expect normal traffic. Eastbound 70 at 79 and Blanchett looks no problems there. Westbound 270 from Washington Elizabeth to Graham Hanley look for traffic to be easing after an earlier accident. Northbound 270 at 44, look for everything to be running smoothly. Westbound 40 between Big Bend and Hanley, look for slow traffic there. Eastbound 44 from Chrysler all the way into Big Bend looks good. And the I-70 reversible lanes are closed until midday for maintenance work. Northbound 270 at Dorset and McKelvey, there's road construction, the left lane is closed. Westbound 5570 at the PSB looks good. Westbound Kingbridge traffic before Laclede's Landing looks good. And Highway 94 at westbound at Kisker, look for an accident that is off the roadway. That is a look at this hour's traffic. This hour's traffic has been sponsored by your greater St. Louis area Toyota dealers. Toyota owners, winterize your car at your St. Louis Metro Toyota dealer. Radiator drain and fill, visual inspection, and battery check, all for $39.95. That's Toyota Value. See dealer for details. Now taking a look at your WGNU forecast for today, tomorrow, and Friday. Partly sunny, breezy, and warmer today. High around 50 this evening. Partly cloudy with a low around 35 for tomorrow. Variably cloudy. A shower is possible. High around 60. Thursday evening, skies turning mostly cloudy. Chance of showers with a low around 40. And then on Friday, chance of showers still cooler with a high only around 50. Currently at the studios of AM 920 WGNU, we have 29 degrees. Lambert Fields reporting 30 under clear skies. Stay tuned for more of Liz Brown and the award-winning wake-up call. That's up next. We'll take another look at your traffic, or your news and your weather in the 10 o'clock hour. I'm Howard Morton for AM 920 WGNU.
I think I'm hearing revolution in the air.
Many are denied equal dignity.
It's
so we say to all in this nation who dare listen to us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, Asian, Latino, that we are brothers and sisters in a long and difficult struggle.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. This morning we are going to take some time out of the Wake Up Call and have a conversation with Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent Peter Arnett. Peter Arnett, who has written more than 3,000 stories when he was covering Vietnam. Peter Arnett, who has been described by David Halberstam as the best reporter of the whole Vietnam War. Peter Arnett, who covered it solo, Gulf War I, Gulf War II. Peter Arnett, who's been described as the baddest boy of American journalism. Peter Arnett is joining us from McLean, Virginia. Peter Arnett, good morning and welcome.
Yeah, Liz, nice chatting with you.
It's good to have you here. The baddest boy of American journalism.
Well, I wear that with pride, but I think there's some badder journalists in the sense people like Cy Hirsch and others who really investigate. All I do is, you know, go to crisis areas and report what I see, Liz. And I don't think that's a bad thing to do, even though what you see out there in these wars often upsets certainly the establishment, the political establishment.
Well, a lot of people, and particularly people that are not historically connected or don't use history to assess where we are today, there are some people out there that would say that this is the worst time in America for journalism, and this is the worst thing that's ever happened to journalism, has been exposed through what has not been covered in the Iraq war, and that the government, the administration that we have in place right now is asking something of journalists that has never been asked of journalists before, to keep their mouth shut and to report the good news and the happy news and the issues from the perspective of this administration. You covered the Vietnam War. Did they ask those types of things of you when you were covering Vietnam?
You know, Liz, what you're saying is true as it applies to the last 40 years, say, since the beginning of the Vietnam era. But prior to that time, American journalists who went overseas to World War I, to World War II, to cover the insurgencies in the Philippines at the turn of the century, the Spanish-American War, they all accepted censorship. They wore American military uniforms. You know, every story they wrote was censored by the military. The difference, the beginning of the modern era, as I see it in journalism, was in Vietnam, where people like David Halberstam and Neil Sheehan and Stanley Kano and Malcolm Brown, some names are familiar to you, some may not be, but I was a young kid with them in Vietnam. We're the ones who tried to, you know, demand the accountability of government and of the military commanders in the field. And one of the reasons, Liz, was that some of those reporters I named did cover the human rights struggle, the civil rights struggle in the South in the late 50s and early 60s, and they were mad as hell of the treatment with black people there and the arrogance of the then, you know, dominating white population. And when they came to Vietnam, they brought that same attitude of challenge to government policies with them. So that's what I think is when the modern era of media doing what it feels should be done began.
But also, wasn't there a different climate in the newsrooms that you operated out of? Didn't you have different type of support and a news just a boss that even believed in what you just described?
The bosses at that time, whether it was the Associated Press, for which I covered, or for the New York Times, you know, they were in a sense products of the previous era when they accepted government censorship. For example, the New York Times willingly killed told a story on the eve of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which would have blown the whole invasion, would have explained, you know, what the U.S. was trying to do and how stupid it was, but they decided not to use that story. I think what you had in the 60s was a very aggressive young media, you know, demanding that their bosses, their superiors, you know, understand that they had to, you know, their report should be in the newspapers. Their coverage should be on television. And the management at that point went along with it. I mean, basically, it was an independent media, independent television organizations. And when you had in the 70s, you know, Woodward and Bernstein in Washington, they had to convince those reporters to get the Washington Post management to go along with them. That what that led to in the, you know, in the late 70s, 80s, and 90s was really a true free and independent media. And I think it was the greatest, it was a golden age of American investigative reporting and American coverage at home and abroad. But all that changed with the Bush administration.
Well, what's different? What's different about the Bush administration? Because Kennedy was saying the same thing. You know, we're in Vietnam to save democracy. We're in Vietnam to bring democracy to the Vietnamese people. The terrorists are the Viet Cong. Kennedy was saying the same thing that Rumsfeld is saying and that George Bush is saying. What's different now?
The difference is that a challenging voice was from the media. On one hand, President Kennedy tried to have David Halberstam, for example, of the New York Times, removed from Vietnam coverage. Fortunately, the New York Times didn't do that. President Lyndon Johnson endeavored several times to have the AP pull me out of Vietnam. He didn't like my reporting. But the difference was that they listened to the reporting. It was considered within the government. And you had those within government that did challenge what was going on in different areas of foreign policy. Bobby Kennedy himself turned against the war, as did others in the Democratic establishment as the war proceeded, you know, primarily because of what the media was writing. So there wasn't a fight to the finish by the administrations to sort of cloud out or totally eradicate the voice of the reporters. What is happening today is that the Bush administration is constantly putting what they call a full-court press on the media, trying to shut out its voice with its own often successful spin on what's happening in the news. They're out-shouting the media, in effect, or they have been. I think that they're starting to fail with their message, but it's taken years, you know, to get the truth out.
Are there any young Peter Arnetts in the news media today, as you see it? Do you see any young reporters out there willing to interested in what you were interested in and willing to pursue it the way that you did?
Well, I began my career, Liz, looking at people like Ernie Pyle, who was a great World War II columnist, and others within the media who did brave things in World War II. They were censored, sure, but they went out with the troops and they got the story. And even though they may not have filed the story that day, sooner or later they had the information that they could use. And in the course of my 40 or 50 years in the business, I've seen newer generations coming in with that same determination. So in Baghdad now, where I spend half my time, I've got a house in the business district of Baghdad. I'm writing a book about the situation. There are young reporters that are willing to take risks. There's a gal now, Jill Carroll. She's a 28-year-old freelance correspondent, was kidnapped a couple of weeks ago by the insurgents. There are other journalists there with the Associated Press and the Times and television reporters who are out there believing in the story. So I think, you know, there is a great new generation of journalists. My own daughter is a reporter who's been overseas. So I think the willingness is there. The difference is that with the explosion of information these days, there's so many different avenues where information, you know, is purveyed, whether it's blogging on the Internet, other Internet information, talk radio, you know, 24-hour news. It is hard for a important fact or important reality to penetrate, you know, to the public mind because there's so many conflicting, you know, messages across the airwaves.
You reported, or you said, that the United States war plan has failed. What were the repercussions of that statement?
I said that during the war, the Gulf War II, when I was helping NBC out with daily coverage. Their team had left Baghdad on the eve of the war in March of 2003. I was there with National Geographic Explorer doing some documentaries on Iraqi families. So I filled in, you know, the blank. So I was on all the NBC shows talking about what was going on. But I was an independent journalist. I had been with CNN for 20 years, but I'd given up. So I was out there on a special, you know, mission, and I was helping them out. And in the course of the war, I gave an interview to Iraqi television in which I talked about what was happening as far as I could see it on the ground. At that point in the war, the U.S. Marines and infantry had got to a town called Nasiriyah that had 18 or 20 killed in a vicious few days of fighting. So there was the emergence of sort of an insurgency. Guerrillas were there. They were attacking the convoys. And that's when I said, you know, the war plan, which was to make a rapid strike towards Baghdad, you know, eliminating the Iraqis along the way, hadn't succeeded. So I expressed the opinion that the war plan at that point hadn't worked. I also pointed out that...
And you used the word failed.
I used the term failed.
Right,
yeah, that
right.
The war plan at that point had failed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also said about, you know, the increasing civilian casualties would not, you know, make the effort. It wouldn't go down well with sort of the international critics of the war. What happened was NBC, which initially supported my comments and saying there's nothing wrong with what I said, I was entitled to my opinion, there was such an enormous backlash, you know, from certainly right-wing commentators and media that resulted in an enormous pressure on NBC. Maybe if I'd been a regular staffer of NBC, they would have stayed with me, because in the first Gulf War, when I was with CNN and was the only reporter to remain in Baghdad and covered that war, you know, live from Baghdad, basically alone for 2 or 3 months, there was enormous pressure on Ted Turner also. He owned CNN at the time. But CNN was independent, and they stayed with me, CNN, and I covered the whole war. I mean, NBC didn't see that they could, so I stopped reporting for them. I did continue reporting for other media, and still do.
Now, it has been reported that you apologized for appearing on Iraqi television. Did you apologize, and why?
I was doing regular reporting on the Today Show,
mm-hmm.
At that point, you know, I'd been covering the war in Baghdad, you know, from the Palestine Hotel and from various bombing sites around the city. And when I was tuning into the Today Show, it was clearly a tremendous emotional content to the coverage. It wasn't just the Today Show coverage. It was a tremendous emotional content within the United States. And whatever the opposition had been to the war prior to it, once American troops got into action and you had American troops being killed in the field, I mean, there was a, you know, the country sort of came together in a way which, you know, I didn't expect. And I just felt, you know, mortified that my remarks on Iraqi television, which were, you know, which I thought were perfectly responsible journalism, had been inflated to the degree, you know, by critics that, you know, presented not only me but NBC as being totally anti-war and indifferent to the suffering. So of my own volition, I went on the Today Show and I said, you know, I'm sorry that I upset so many people. Actually, when I went on, just prior to my going on the air, Katie Couric was interviewing a woman with two kids whose husband had been killed in Nasiriyah 2 days earlier, and she was really crestfallen. So I felt,
Did you think that was fair reporting from NBC's perspective, from Katie Couric's perspective?
Yeah, I think, if families of young men killed in war,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think they have every, you know, they certainly, you know, suffer from that loss. And many of these families, with good reason, believe that their sons go to war at the request of the government, at the request of the country, and give their lives. I think that, sure, under those circumstances, I mean, these young men are heroic. Now, the decisions that may lead them to war, those who made those decisions, not necessarily heroic, but those who take the call, who are willing to go. You know, I think that most are stirred by patriotism and just really believe it's the right thing to do. And there, a lot of the families feel the same way. Now, I know there are other families who are starting to look at the casualties in Iraq as being unnecessary and wasteful. And I started seeing that in the Vietnam War. And in Vietnam, as in Iraq, in Vietnam, there was general support for the Vietnam War, even though the media was pointing out the pitfalls of policy. As the body bags started coming home in larger numbers in Vietnam, the public turned against that war. And it's taken the body bags in Iraq, from what I can see, to turn Americans or many Americans against the war in Iraq. So
would you say it again in 2006? And would you apologize again in 2006?
I don't think you can relate. I don't think the apology is that significant, mm-hmm. to tell you the honest truth. I think at the time, considering the circumstances and the whole, you know, the whole environment, the emotional environment that covered the first couple of weeks of that war, I mean, it was, for me, it was the professional thing to do. It was also a way, I didn't want to get into a slugging match with, you know, with Fox News and the talk radio, fanatics about whether I was patriotic or not. I mean, I just wanted to get beyond that, to tell you the honest truth, Liz.
And so, in 2006, the U.S. war plan has it failed?
Oh, definitely failed. I mean, the war plan definitely failed. The first part of the strategy was to, the plan was simply to march to Baghdad or roll the tanks to Baghdad quickly and get out with 2 or 3 months afterwards. I mean, that literally was the war plan. We can get this done in 3.5 to 4 months and come home. And it hasn't worked. I mean, the on the way to Baghdad, the reality of the future appeared in places like Nasiriyah and other localities where you had insurgents coming out. You had suicide bombers. I mean, before the war, Iraqi officials had told me there would be an insurgency. I'd talked about that before and during the war. And there was an insurgency, and there was no, and the war plan did not take into account the fact that you had to suppress an insurgency in addition to getting on the road and making a dash for Baghdad. And the insurgency grew, and the U.S. wasn't in a position, was unable to deter it, and is still unable to deter it. So I don't think there's any doubt that the war plan has failed.
And we have to take a break. I'm talking to Peter Arnett. He's joining us from McLean, Virginia. And my name is Liz Brown. This is the Wake Up Call. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. We'll get to some of your questions and your comments when we get back. Stay with us.
We're working 50 years from 9 to 5.
The producer of Smucker's Stars on Ice. This year's show celebrates our 20th anniversary, and we are so excited. It's a show about the show. You'll get a behind-the-scenes look from the past 20 years and see how it all happens, from auditions and rehearsals to opening night and everything in between. From our most shining accomplishments to some of the less-than-perfect moments, see skating's best Olympic and world champions in this one-night-only performance of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
With special guest Kurt Browning coming to Savas Center Friday, February 3rd, 7:30 p.m. Your tickets are on sale now at the box office, all Ticketmaster outlets, and at Ticketmaster.com. Kids and senior discounts available. Smucker's Stars on Ice, an IMG production.
It's going to be a great celebration, the 20th anniversary tour of Smucker's Stars on Ice.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested, and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues during the 2005-2006 African American History Series. This Saturday, January 21st, Dr. Michael Benjamin will explore how early librarian Daniel Murray sought to preserve African American culture. Reservations are required. Call 314-361-9017. Prior to the program, attendees may purchase breakfast at the Missouri History Museum's award-winning restaurant, Merriweather's. Breakfast is $6 for the general public, $5 for Missouri Historical Society members. The presentation is free to all. Breakfast served at 9 a.m. The presentation begins at 10 a.m. For more information, visit www.mohistory.org.
Science or religion? Republican or Democrat? Politics, education, crime? Or you just want to talk about Girl Scout cookies? What's your opinion? What's your solution? Tell me, Dave Linehan, on Radio Free St. Louis, WGNU, Monday through Friday, 4 to 6. Try your best.
Scientists and doctors are agreeing more and more that diet can determine whether a person lives a long, healthy life or a life full of unnecessary disease and even death.
I have diabetes, and after gradually changing my diet and getting more exercise, I've noticed my sugar level has become stable and my feet don't swell as much.
My blood pressure has been high for 3 years. Once I stopped eating salt and slowed down on eating oily foods, my blood pressure has gotten back to normal.
It seems like I gained weight just by looking at food. But now that I have the knowledge, and most importantly, the discipline, to make conscious, healthy choices, my whole life has changed.
Obesity, diabetes, and heart disease cause millions of deaths each year. Every 45 seconds, someone in America suffers from a stroke. Join the battle against these controllable and preventable diseases. Listen to Healthy Alternatives.
Create a healthy future today.
Another powerful interview is set for Friday morning here on The Wake Up Call. Shoddy screening procedures cause tens of thousands of hemophiliacs to become infected with AIDS and hepatitis during the 1980s. Today, half of those people are now dead. Journalist Stacy Milbauer wrote a book about the ordeal some of the survivors went through and also found some shocking reasons, mostly monetary greed, as to why it happened. Dying in Vain, that's V-E-I-N, with author Stacy Milbauer. Another revealing story you'll hear only on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, Friday morning at 8. Anywhere in the world at WGNU.net, the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
I heard he sang a good song. I heard he has died, and so I came to see him and listen for a while.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is Pulitzer Prize winning correspondent Peter Arnett. Peter Arnett, best known for his live television coverage from Baghdad during the first Gulf War in 1991. In fact, he's credited with putting CNN on the map and making it a household name. Peter Arnett, welcome back.
Thank you, Liz. Pleasure to be with you still.
One of the things that you talked about and when you discussed the issue of the failure of the U.S. war plan in Iraq, was the issue of the casualties of the Iraqi people. George Bush finally said something that I don't think any other president's really ever confessed to, is the number of dead Iraqi civilians. He put it around, I believe, 30,000. Do you think that's a fair number? And how do you think the reporting of the Iraqi casualties has been by this media?
The U.S. Military has said for, you know, for months, or did say for months, that it kept no official count of civilian casualties. I don't know why they did keep a count of Iraqi military police casualties, American casualties, American civilian casualties, but for some reason no count of Iraqi casualties. For that reason, because there's really been no official count, and from what has been seen the first couple of years of the conflict, the Iraqi authorities didn't keep any number, that, the estimates have gone as high as 100,000 Iraqi civilians killed by some, observing groups. The 30,000 seems to have become acceptable by most observers. It's a lot of people. And so it's not really disputed to any great degree. I think it'll be a long time, if ever, that we'll learn the true number, Liz.
Let me get to some of our callers, please. A call from San Francisco. David, good morning.
Yeah, morning, Liz. And, Peter, I'd have 100 questions to ask you. I'll limit myself to 89 of them. By the way, I think in the casualty count that you're talking about, if I understand right, Fallujah is actually, or was, bigger than St. Louis. It's about 300-something thousand. They leveled it in about a week and a half, and a considerable estimate of casualties there would be 100,000 dead or wounded. So just in Fallujah over a year ago, 100,000 civilians is one. I wanted to ask, though, about whether or not whistleblowers are being either kidnapped or executed out there. It's thought that Nicholas Berg was one of the earliest of the people that was had his head cut off in a video that made its way into the internet world. And whether or not Nicholas Berg apparently was working on the radio transmitter towers at Abu Ghraib, and if people were transmitting these digital photographs of the torture from Abu Ghraib, he, with his servicing equipment, may have been able to hack in to these photographs, and whether or not he was seen as a whistleblower and was executed for it insiders.
Okay, I'm going to let that be the question. Thank you, David.
Sure, no trouble. Have a good morning.
All right. Peter.
Yeah, well, thank you, Dave. Let me respond to both questions. Indeed, the population of Fallujah was maybe 200,000 or 300,000. Most of the population, however, was evacuated. And while there were initial reports of very high casualties, they just didn't turn out to be that. Well, when we say high, if I remember, maybe several hundred dead, I don't think even that number finally bore investigation. However, most of Fallujah was destroyed, and it really hasn't come back. There's population back there, but not much of it has been rebuilt. But certainly the initial numbers of dead was inflated. The second question about Nicholas Berg, that is a total new wrinkle to me, and I just don't get the feeling, and I spent a lot of time in Iraq, that something like an assassination would take place in the environment you have there. I just couldn't conceive of the authorities or the administration doing that kind of thing.
Do you think, Peter, that the press in its reporting of the issue of weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein, do you think that the failure to get the truth out about the fact that there were no weapons of mass destruction, was that because the press was taken in, or was it because that they weren't able to do it?
I think it's pretty clear, and in fact the press, the media has fessed up to it, that there was so much enthusiasm, so much support for the Bush administration after 9/11, that there was very little questioning of government policy. There were plenty of signals, certainly in 2002, that the whole weapons of mass destruction issue had been inflated. There were former weapons inspectors. One, Scott Ritter, very well, came out every day to any audience that he could find to say that, he being a former tough inspector had come to the conclusion that there were none there. The UN, by UN inspectors by late 2002, and I was going out with them on these investigations, they found absolutely nothing in dozens of sites that the CIA was claiming at that point that there were weapons of mass destruction. And it came, it was never, the press never gave enough attention to the negative side of it. And for that reason, the New York Times and others have been very apologetic about their willingness to go along with clearly inflated, incorrect views.
You've worked through the Kennedy administration. You've worked through the Lyndon Johnson administration, Reagan, all of them. How does this administration, George W. Bush's administration, are they worse than any other administration in terms of their execution of this war?
they're certainly more effective, or they were more effective in controlling the information flow that came out of the Iraq war. They're able, in fact, up to just recently, the president was able to say frequently that the war was being won. Up to recently, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said the insurgency was on its last leg. So this wasn't being challenged to any great degree, say, by the Democrats. I think what this administration has done, it has tamed the opposition, the Democrats. In fact, the press, I think, has retained its voice. It has come back with some excellent investigative reporting and challenging reporting on Iraq in the last year. And you've had whistleblowers at home, Richard Clark and others from within government, Colonel Wilkinson, Colin Powell's aide, have come out and challenged and criticized the policies of the Bush administration. Now, in terms of other wars, going back to the Kennedy administration, the President Kennedy was supported in his initial entry into Iraq, into Vietnam, which was sending a maximum of maybe 8,000 advisors in 1961 and 62, at a time when American advisors were all over the world. It didn't really become a big issue under President Kennedy. And under President Johnson, when it became an issue, it quickly brought in criticism in Congress, vehement criticism from Senator William Fulbright and others. During the Reagan administration, there was a lot of criticism in Congress about the Iran-Contra affair, where he was secretly supporting the Contra forces against the Nicaraguan government and then selling weapons to Iran, for hostage releases. A lot of those are criticism within Congress. What characterizes the Bush administration, that Congress doesn't seem to be adequately rising to the challenge of criticizing what the Bush administration is doing. And you see that from wiretapping through war policy and so forth.
Do you feel personally that the Bush administration, let me ask this way, did you ever hear from the Bush administration about your reporting? Did anybody ever from that administration talk to you or try to get to you?
No, they didn't, because really the mainstream reporting I did during the Bush administration was really only during those few days of the Iraq War. I had left CNN by 2000, by the time the Bush administration came into office. And it was only really in the week or so, 2 weeks that I reported for NBC, that my profile suddenly shot up again. The Bush administration wasn't a factor in NBC's decision, I don't think. It wasn't. So I don't have any personal axe to grind against the Bush administration.
Let me get to some of our other callers here. Bob, you have a question for our guest, Peter Arnett.
Yes, Liz. Thank you very much for bringing Mr. Arnett to us. I have a quick question with two parts. I would like to know how it is possible for, in the background, not who does it, but what makes it possible that all the major networks can be able to vilify and then nullify persons who speak negatively about the this administration and the bad things that they are doing, and most importantly, or as an example, how they all at one time could take a yell from Howard Dean and just destroy a whole presidential campaign, and now Hillary Clinton by saying that in her opinion, this administration will be looked at as the worst ever in history, and just wonder how they get away with that, and is this a Howard? A person who is told who should go on the Sunday morning talk shows, all the president's men, and put their spin on it. What is the mechanism that allows that to happen? And thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. And Peter, if you could hold on to the answer to that, because we have to take a break right now.
Sure.
I'm talking to Peter Arnett, Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent. This is Liz Brown, The Wake Up Call. Our number here is 1-877-920-WGNU. We are archived daily at whiterosesociety.org. If you missed an hour, go get your hour. Also, check out the website at lizbrown.com. Some information about Peter Arnett is also on my website at lizbrown.com. That's LIZZBrown.com. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Don't you see that's what's wrong with the world?
reportedly, the United States is preparing to move militarily against Iran. The latest flap over Iran having nuclear capabilities may be just the excuse the Bush administration has been looking for. Former UN Weapons Inspector Scott Ritter has been sounding a warning on this very theme for several years now, and it appears he may have been right on the money. Will such military action involve Israel and NATO? Scott Ritter lays out a chilling scenario that could be a harbinger for world war on the next edition of Mondays at 9 with Liz Brown.
I know the place to shop for all your appliance needs. Sears, 3425 Union, black-owned and black-operated, Jerome Williams. Sears carries the top six appliance brands, Kenmore, Whirlpool, Maytag, GE, Amana, and Frigidaire. Sears also has the latest in electronics, TVs, VCRs, camcorders, and DVD players. Now, if you find a lower price on an identical branded item with the same features currently available at another local retail store, Sears will match that price plus give you 10% off the difference. That's the Sears Price Match Plus policy. So, save yourself a trip. Stop at Sears first and get a low price promise plus a great selection for your home and garden needs. It's all at your local Sears store right there at 3425 Union. Jerome Williams, 389-9700.
What is race? What is racism? How has racism been manifested and what are its effects? The Missouri Historical Society addresses these fundamental issues during the 2005-2006 African American History Series. This Saturday, January 21st, Dr. Michael Benjamin will explore how early librarian Daniel Murray sought to preserve African American culture. Reservations are required. Call 314-361-9017. Prior to the program, attendees may purchase breakfast at the Missouri History Museum's award-winning restaurant, Merriweather's. Breakfast is $6 for the general public, $5 for Missouri Historical Society members. The presentation is free to all. Breakfast served at 9 a.m. The presentation begins at 10 a.m. For more information, visit www.mohistory.org.
This is Dr. Laura Schlesinger. Join me every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU, and get a new attitude.
Hello, my name is Orlando, your host of Against the Flow. Against the Flow is a program designed to take you deeper into the mysteries of the Bible. And in order to do that, you have to go against the flow of the current brands of political Christianity being taught. It matters not what you believe, but what you are willing to believe. Your thoughts and comments are welcome here. Join me every Wednesday night from 10 to 11 as we go against the flow here on Radio Free St. Louis, AM 920 WGNU. Look at the negative, but you should always
live in the positive. Another powerful interview is set for Friday morning here on The Wake Up Call. Shoddy screening procedures cause tens of thousands of hemophiliacs to become infected with AIDS and hepatitis during the 1980s. Today, half of those people are now dead. Journalist Stacy Milbauer wrote a book about the ordeal some of the survivors went through and also found some shocking reasons, mostly monetary greed, as to why it happened. Dying in Vain, that's V-E-I-N, with author Stacy Milbauer. Another revealing story you'll hear only on the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown, Friday morning at 8.
Big Brother is watching, and we're watching Big Brother. It's the award-winning Wake Up Call with Liz Brown.
Para donde vas? Para donde vas? Para donde vas? Para donde vas? Donde vas?
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to the Wake Up Call. This is Liz Brown. My guest this hour is Pulitzer Prize winning correspondent Peter Arnett. And Peter, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to the question that was asked right before the break.
Yeah, I will do so, Liz. That is a very important question that's frequently asked. But in my response, I would say, heaven help anyone who gets in the media eye these days. It's sort of an era of media cheap shots. You hear it, you know, in the late night comedy shows, then you hear it on talk radio, and also the 24-hour news cycle that Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, if they can grab a tidbit of any kind, and if it's Howard Dean's scream, they're going to play it and replay it and play it simply for almost for entertainment value. And this is a phenomenon of our modern era. When I started in journalism, there were the wire services, newspapers, and two television networks. And look what we have now, a whole cacophony of sound. So the media, one media tends to pick up on what the other is doing.
But isn't it also, if I may interrupt just for a second, because CNN is reportedly planning on hiring Glenn Beck. And Glenn Beck is a talk radio personality that has said things like, I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore, and I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do so. So isn't it more than just them playing it, but they're also bringing the people out to do these cheap shots?
Well, you're absolutely right. That is also a phenomenon. CNN, my old CNN.
How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel?
The CNN of Bernie Shaw, you know, and wonderful, responsible anchors and people, that is going by the wayside. Why is it going by the wayside? It's the ratings game. I mean, it is the bottom line. I mean, when you talk about the newspaper industry today and the television industry, I mean, the bottom line is how do you make a profit in terms of talk television? How do you beat Fox or CNN? How do you beat Fox? Well, you sort of, put on the same sort of thing as Fox is doing. I mean, there's more commentary now than news on CNN, and it's just going to grow and get worse. So that tends to, because most viewers, tend to look at CNN for a while or look at Fox, this information is thrown in their face. Now, the overall picture is terrifying in that, when I started, there were American journalists all over the world reporting from Africa or the Middle East and everywhere else. Now those numbers have been reduced by two-thirds at least. We're not getting any information from what's happening internationally other than what America is doing specifically, say, in Iraq or Afghanistan, or if there's a major earthquake or a tsunami somewhere. But if you look at the days, what the information input to viewers, they just don't know really what's going on in the world. This is a terrible, a terrible commentary on the media today, but the media just doesn't seem to give a damn about it.
It must break your heart to hear that somebody that called Katrina survivor scumbags has a gig on CNN.
It's ludicrous. It is absolutely ludicrous, and there's only one reason that person will be there if he goes there. It's to try and attract more viewers to improve the profit margin.
What happened to Osama bin Laden?
Well, that is a question.
Remember him?
Of course, the Bush administration prefers not to answer what the administration is trying to say, that he's not important anymore. Like, if we can't catch him, okay, he doesn't mean anything. Osama bin Laden, clearly remains in a wild, uncharted mountain area between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And the experts that I know say he's still a very important figure, for the Arab community and for the Islamic world. And he's also very effective. Now, is he technically running, terrorist operations in Iraq? No, it doesn't seem as though he has his hand on the button or anything. But his presence, his continuing presence, his continuing existence is an important factor for terrorists, and a sad commentary on the inability of the Bush administration to go and get him.
You caught him. You interviewed him in 1997. Why haven't they been able to find him?
Well, that is a very good question. I did interview him, in fact, when I was with CNN, and that's when he was a less threatening figure and more accessible. It was during the Afghan war, really, in 2001, when the U.S. missed the chance to get him in the Tora Bora Mountains, where I had initially interviewed him, and the U.S. decided not to use its own forces in an action against his hideout, but to use Afghans, and he escaped. And that was a serious breach, a serious bad decision made at the time that the U.S. is still paying for.
And it hasn't been the last serious bad decision that they've made in executing this war anyway. Let me get to another caller or two. Mildred, you have a question for our guest, Peter Arnett.
Yes, I do. Peter, it's an honor to speak to you. In Desert Storm, I used to sit in front of my television as soon as Peter Arnett came on the radio, or the television, I'm sorry, because I believed I could count on what you were saying. I think you're an exceptional journalist, and I hope and pray that you have success all the days of your life. Now, when it comes to war, I hate war, and I despise those who initiate war, and that includes the Desert Storm operation and the Iraq operation. Peter, I heard you say something once, and I hope you still feel this way. Quote, I'm sick of war, unquote. Are you still sick of war?
I am sick of wars. But, you know, it has been said that war is the father of us all. I mean, wars, you know, are the benchmarks of American history. I'm sick of wars, but unless reporters are out giving eyewitness, unless you learn the truth of wars, whether it's Iraq, or Vietnam, or wherever the next war is, the facts help bring wars to end faster. So I'm sick of them. That, you know, I'm still in Iraq a lot of the time, and I hope journalists will in the future, because only their eyewitnesses can bring, you know, bring insanity such as war to an end.
And, Peter, we have 2 minutes left here. You're still in Iraq. You have a home in Baghdad. And we have such dismal reporting coming out of Iraq as a whole. What is the story, one story, that needs to be told coming out of Iraq that's not being told?
It is the true suffering and unhappiness of the Iraqi population. You look at, say, Baghdad, a city of 5 million people, and the area surrounding Baghdad, probably, I'm looking at a third of the Iraqi population. You know, they're living on 2 or 3 hours of electricity a day, and that is a country where, you know, temperatures at this point are down to 35 or 40 degrees, a lot of rain. Summer temperatures go up to 125 degrees, 130 degrees. It is a society, most Iraqis are living in a modern society. They have air conditioning and refrigeration. How can they maintain that in 2 or 3 hours a day? The security is shocking. I mean, so many families I know, Iraqi families, have lost their daughters to kidnappers, their sons and husbands, criminality. That story is not being coming out. I mean, this all the talk is about we're giving democracy. No, I mean, the statistics, the reality of Iraq is that most Iraqis are unhappy with the war, and actually most Iraqis want Americans to go home. That hasn't been reported.
Peter Arnett, thank you so much for taking your time to join us on the wake-up call this morning.
My pleasure, Liz.
Take care. Listen, folks, this is Liz Brown, the wake-up call. I'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. Stay strong.
Very sad news for all of you, the people who love peace all over the world. Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight. Remember? I remember saying that progress is being made. If you stick a knife in my back 9 inches and pull it out 6 inches, there's no progress. You pull it all the way out, that's not progress.
920 on your AM dial, WGNU, Granite City, St. Louis.
Latest from ABC News, I'm Daria Alvinger. We're not touching this. The Supreme Court opted to take a pass on the latest abortion case to come before the justices.
Sidestepping several major abortion issues, the unanimous Supreme Court decided a lower court was wrong to throw out a New Hampshire law that requires parents be notified before a teenager can get an abortion. The justices ordered more court hearings.